Marshall Hammett, America's leading detective fiction writer and creator of Sam Spade, the hard-boiled private eye, and William Spear, radio's outstanding producer-director of mystery and crime drama, join their talents to make your hair stand on end with the adventures of Sam Spade.
You hired me yesterday morning, but the real start of it was back in 45. Flashback.
Did you ever wonder what a bull must feel like when they let him into the ring? The bars go up, he's free, he rushes out figuring, "I've gotten away." And there in front of him are 50 guys with pitchforks and a man with an oversized knitting needle. He looks around and there's no way out. Last week I found out what that feeling is like.
Nero Wolf's office, Archie Goodwin speaking. Mr. Wolf? No, he isn't. Huh? Oh, well, for you, maybe he is.
I'm not here.
Oh, yes, yeah, he's always here.
I've gone out.
No, no, he seldom ever goes out.
I won't start on anything tonight.
Well, sure, he'd love to start on a case tonight.
Phooey.
The Adventures of the Saint, starring Vincent Price.
Hello there, this is Diamond. You know, this business I'm in can get pretty silly sometimes. I can go along for a whole month and get by on nothing but meals at the automat and a dozen laughs a day. The funny ones usually pay just as well as the tough ones, but eventually somebody starts something that's about as funny as an open grave.
And now here is your guide.
There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you this fall.
OTR
And now, here is OTR
Hey everyone, this is OTR Rob welcoming you to another edition of The Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective. This episode is from July 16th, 1945. The episode is entitled The Tire Oriental Lines. And I'm going to throw in a bonus episode of The Adventures of Rocky Jordan. And that episode comes from January 30th, 1949. The episode is entitled The Bakshish Boy. And I did a correction on this particular episode of Rocky Jordan. There was a sound going through the second half of the episode was going so I copied the noise and I copied it. There was an interval of 2 seconds in between the first and the second. So I copied it into that pattern 4 times. So there was a 2 second interval in between. And once I copied it, I then told the machine to correct it, to excise that noise from the program. And it did it perfectly. It got the noise out. So you're not going to hear a tsh, 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 through the second half of the episode of Rocky Jordan, the Bakshish Boy. I'm kind of proud of that. So anyway, I just thought I would give you behind the scenes stuff of what I have to put up with and what I do to bring you nice sounding episodes. And this is a nice sounding episode. And I got that lousy noise out, which I'm very happy about. I'm proud of, like I said. So anyway, enjoy this Michael Shane and also enjoy The Adventures of Rocky Jordan. So thanks and we'll see you next week.
The Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective. The people who make 76 gasoline and Triton motor oil, Union Oil Company, present The Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective, starring Wally Mayer and Kathy Lewis. As a seasoned private detective, Mike Shane is hardly surprised at anything. Puzzled, yes. In fact, this evening, Mike is very puzzled, along with his trim and lovely assistant, Phyllis Knight. Mike's car grinds to a stop near the Presidio, in front of an old brownstone mansion overlooking the Golden Gate. In fact, it is the home of Captain Tyre, shipping magnate. The car door slams. Mike and Phyllis hurry up a flight of stairs. The front door opens before them.
Oh, good evening. What do you wish, please?
Mike Shane and Miss Knight to see Captain Tyre, please.
Oh, yes, sir. You follow Hop G, please.
Yes.
Thank you. Oh, Mr. Shane?
Hmm?
Oh, you did, Mr. Shane.
Yes, that's right. This is Miss Knight.
How do you do? I'm Norma Tyre. I talked to you on the phone.
Yes, you were calling for your uncle. We're sorry to be late.
I am, too. The captain gets so impatient, you know. Hop, take Mr. Shane's hat.
Oh, yes, missy. Yeah.
Now, they're all waiting in the library. In here, please.
Well, Mr. Shane, you did make port at last.
At last, sir. I hope
Who's that? That with you? Your wife?
I'm Mr. Shane's assistant captain, Miss Phyllis Knight.
Assistant? Fine breed of men nowadays. Always got some woman trailing behind them. A man's world.
Captain Tyre,
All right. Let's get the introductions over. My brother Milton, general manager of the Tyre Oriental Lines.
How do you do, Mr.
How do you
Shane?
Do, sir?
Mr. Thomas Packer, our secretary treasurer.
Glad to know you.
How do you do, sir?
Mr. Shane, we're sailing in pretty choppy waters. That's why we're signing you on.
Yes, I gathered that much, sir.
As you know, sir, from the days of windjammers, the Tyre Oriental Lines has run the finest and fastest packet ships to China and India. We've had plenty of competition, but our line is still fastest and finest.
You've always had beautiful ships, Captain. I've watched them sail out the Golden Gate many a time. Wished I was aboard.
Yes, maybe one of them you watched was the SS Java. There's a picture of her over the bookcase there. But you saw her only once.
Say, that's right. She went down on her maiden voyage, didn't she, several years ago?
Yes, struck a reef off Hong Kong on the Singapore run.
My brother was a captain.
Oh?
Not Milton here. My other brother, Norman.
My father. He and mother went down with the ship. Oh,
Board of Inquiry looked into it, of course. My brother Norman was dead, so he couldn't testify. Mr. Graves was first officer, and Mr. Graves was on the bridge when they hit that reef. He cleared himself with the Board of Inquiry, but I have never been satisfied, and he's never held another berth with our company.
And he hasn't done very well with other lines, according to what Graves writes to the paper.
I don't understand.
Well, I'll show you. We've got newspaper clippings here of letters he's had published each year on the anniversary date of the sinking of the Java.
It's been going on for years now. In every letter, he claims that the Java was poorly built, that we made a goat out of him, and now no other line will give him a berth. He says we've ruined his career.
Ha. You see, Mr. Shane, next Thursday will be another anniversary of the loss of the Java. And we understand Mr. Graves is going to send another letter to the newspapers.
And the following week, we launch our newest ship, the SS India. We're an old and respected line, Mr. Shane. I don't intend that we have any cloud hanging over that launching. I've had enough of Mr. Graves' blather. I won't have any more of it. No more, do you hear?
Captain, how do you know he's going to write another letter?
He telephoned the captain and said so.
We think he's being paid by some other ship line to embarrass us. We want you to find out the facts.
Isn't it possible that he just has a persecution complex? Has brooded over the affair too much?
I doubt it. And if he's taking money to scuttle our line, I'll attend to that gentleman myself. I've handled his breed before.
I'll do as I please.
Who's in command here? Will I have to settle that again?
Now, Captain, you've got to watch yourself.
I never saw such a crew of old women.
Captain Tyre, I haven't taken this case yet. And if I do, it must be on one condition.
What's that?
If we find that Graves is guilty as you suspect, the matter must be turned over to the police. You're not to settle it yourself.
We agree to that, Mr. Shane.
I want Captain Tyre's statement, please, sir.
Well, it's better than he deserves. All right.
Good. Now, can any of you tell me where I'll find this Mr. Graves? I may want to talk to him.
The last we heard, he was staying at some apartment on Clay Street, a place that caters to old sailors.
Oh, that's good enough.
You better get on it tonight, sir.
I'll check back as soon as I have something, sir.
Glad to have met all of you. I'll see you to the door. Mr. Shane, may I ask What will be your first step?
Well, we'll probably drop by police headquarters to see if they have any record on Graves. Then we'll check his friends and acquaintances to see if he's spending money beyond his means.
Miss, your hat, please.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
Good night, Mr. Shane. Miss Knight, good night.
Angel, what's the matter? You were so particularly quiet in there.
Well, you noticed. Well, I spent most of my time reading a note and wondering what was in the wind.
Hmm?
When Norma shook hands with me, she pressed a note into my palm. Wait a minute, here's what it says. Mr. Shane, I've got to see you. Your apartment, 10 o'clock, tonight.
And that's about the whole story, Inspector. Mm-hmm. Phil and I are checking up on this pert mate, Lee Graves.
We thought you might have some record on him, Inspector, if he's ever been in trouble with the police.
Well, not here in homicide, Phil.
Oh, of course not, but your general fingerprint file might show something.
It might. Sergeant.
Yes, sir?
Take a look at the fingerprint cards. You got the name?
Lee Graves, right away, sir.
Well, kids, I'd say you were going in for exotic stuff. Tire Oriental Line, the ship sinking in the China Sea.
Mm-hmm. If you want color, Inspector, you ought to see the old captain. He's saltier than the briny itself.
Yes, sir. He could bite an anchor chain in two.
And his niece. Why does she want to talk to you in your apartment, Mike?
I don't know, but I'm really looking forward to it, Angel.
Indeed.
Inspector.
Well, that's past work, Sergeant. Find anything?
I haven't looked, sir. I'm afraid I've got bad news.
Yes?
You'll really need Graves' fingerprints now. A few minutes ago, Captain Tyre was murdered.
We'll rejoin Mike Shane and his adventures in just a moment. Friends, if your car has a habit of playing the anvil chorus every time you take a hill or step on the gas, perhaps you're using the wrong motor oil. Now, that statement may sound odd to you, so maybe we'd better explain. You see, most drivers recognize carbon knocking and pinging when they hear it. But very few know that nearly all carbon formed in engines comes from the lubricating oil and not from the gasoline. However, and this is the payoff, motor oils differ widely in the amount of carbon they will form. That's why we say your carbon troubles may be due to the brand of lubricating oil you buy. Because, and this is a proved laboratory fact, Triton motor oil forms less carbon than any of the 7 leading premium oils sold in the West. Yes, that's right. Triton cuts down carbon. The secret of Triton's superiority lies in Union Oil Company's exclusive propane solvent refining process. That means all harmful asphalts, waxes, and sulfur have been removed, leaving a pure 100% paraffin-based motor oil, an oil that will furnish hundreds of miles of safe, dependable lubrication. You can buy Triton motor oil at all Union Oil Minuteman stations. Just look for the sign of the big orange and blue 76. Thank you. The president of the Tyre Oriental Ship Lines has been murdered. In the private study of Captain Tyre, Mike, Phyllis, and the inspector examine the body slumped over the desk. The inspector turns to the captain's brother.
Has anyone touched this body?
No one, Inspector.
And who found him?
I did.
All right, give the sergeant your name, and now tell us what you know.
Thomas Packer, secretary treasurer of the company. About 10 minutes after Mr. Shane left the house, somebody rang the doorbell. Hop G let him in and took him to the captain's study. I asked Hop who it was. He said a Mr. Graves. Yeah.
The captain and Graves were alone in the study?
Yes. Norma, Milton, and I were in the living room. I got uneasy about Graves and came and knocked on the door there. When I got no answer, I walked in. The captain was just as you see him.
Yes, at first we thought he'd fainted until we saw the blood.
And this man Graves?
Boy, he disappeared. We found that veranda door open over there. It's the only way he could have left.
Mm-hmm. Sergeant, I guess we shake out the dragnet for Mr. Graves.
Mike, where I'm standing, I can see something white under the body, just the edge of it.
Where?
Here, see? Under his chest, on the desk. I think it's a paper of some sort.
Yeah, I see it too, Phil. I'll raise him up a bit, Mike.
Look, there's what killed him, his own paper knife.
Boy, right into the heart. Look.
Inspector.
Yeah, Mike?
There's paper underneath him, it's a note for us. To whom it may concern. my suicide may appear the act of an insane man, it is not. There are reasons. My family knows these reasons very well.
What?
Captain Tyre.
Good suicide.
Hey, let me see that, Mike.
There are reasons. My family knows the reasons very well.
I'm sure we do not.
Why, I haven't the slightest idea what Captain meant. How about you, Packard?
Well, I'm not in the family, but it stumps me.
We were talking to the captain less than an hour ago, and he certainly didn't strike me as being in a suicidal frame of mind.
No, I can't imagine a proud old sea captain killing himself a week before he launches a new ship.
He was afraid of bad publicity from Lee Graves. I don't know what could be worse than the president of the line committing suicide.
You people are satisfied that this is the captain's handwriting?
Yes, it's the captain's.
There's no question.
The angle of that knife into his chest. Was the captain right or left-handed?
Right-handed.
Uh-huh, that checks. Look, if you people don't mind, we'd like to make some diagrams, routine stuff, you know. We'd like to have the room to ourselves for a while, if you don't mind.
Of course.
We'll wait in the living room.
All right, Mike. What do you want to tell me?
Take another look at that suicide note, Inspector. It was not written at this desk.
How do you know?
Simple. The desk has a glass top, but the back of the note paper shows it was written on a soft surface.
Uh-huh.
And see? The pen flooded once, the ink soaked through, and some green fuzz stuck to the other side. Fuzz from a green blotting pad.
Well, Mike, maybe the captain wrote the note somewhere else and then brought it in here.
Sure, a lot of suicides write their farewells and carry them around in their pockets for days even.
This paper is fresh, Inspector. It hasn't even got a crease in it. Now, you can talk from now till breakfast, and I say Captain Tyre was too rugged a number for suicide. Even his family can't explain it.
All right, suppose it is murder. The next thing...
Yes, the same question every inspector and D.A. asks.
What is the motive?
Sure. And another thing. If Lee Graves killed the captain, how did he force him to write this note? There's no sign of a struggle.
Well, let's stop asking questions and find out. Sergeant, there may be some good fingerprints on that knife.
I'll check it right away, sir.
Mike,
his
dictaphone here. There's a cylinder on it.
Well, can you tell if it's been used?
Yeah. The wax has a few grooves cut in it.
Okay, it's worth a try. Play it back to us.
All right.
Hacker, where are those blasted maritime phones for the SS China? Hacker, how many times have I got to tell you to get hold of Crowder? I want my will changed. Give him those notes I dictated at the office.
That's all there is, Mike.
Sergeant, never mind that knife. Bring Mr. Packer in here.
Yes, sir.
So, the captain was worried about his will.
Well, that might bear out suicide if he was tidying up affairs before his death.
It might mean a number of things.
Yeah. You want me, Inspector?
Yes, Mr. Packer. Did Captain Tyre have an attorney by the name of Crowder?
Why, yes.
And did Crowder make the changes in the captain's will?
How did... No, he didn't.
Didn't you get hold of Crowder? You were to give him some notes.
No, I didn't give him the notes.
Why not?
Well, the captain's brother and Norma told me not to. It would mean the control of the company would go to a board of governors.
I see. That's all, Mr. Packer. Thank you.
I'd like to ask a favor, Inspector.
Yes?
The captain's death is a great shock to all of us, but the business must go on. We've got a lot of work to do at the office tonight.
Must all three of you go?
Yes, sir. We have an $8 million ship to launch next week.
Very well. The sergeant will tell the men outside to let you pass.
Yes, we'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, Inspector, you wanted a motive. You've got two of them. A discharged first mate with a grudge against the captain.
Mm-hmm.
A brother and a niece who now control the company due to the captain's very timely death.
Sergeant and Mike Shane.
Hello.
Who's the lady with you?
Hi, Manny. We're looking for one of your customers, Lee Graves.
Oh, Skipper Graves?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was here a little while ago. I swept him out.
He was drunk?
Oh, no more than usual. I just got tired of hearing him carve up Captain Tyre.
That's so. What did he say?
Oh, you know the skipper. Wait till he gets his hands on Captain Tyre. He'll string him up the yardarm, bash his head into the belaying pin, keel haul the old barnacle.
Bloodthirsty cuss, huh?
Don't worry, lady. He's been talking like that for years. He's killed Captain Tyre 917 ways. Yes, sir. Double scotch, come.
What's the matter with you kids? You heard what the bartender said. You treated as casually as
yeah,
if the
sure,
man hadn't even...
Sure. Graves is too loose-tongued.
Well...
If he planned to kill the captain, he wouldn't advertise it to Joe Dokes and his yellow pup.
It works both ways, Mike. If Graves hopped on the idea long enough and then got into a fight with the captain, he might find himself carrying out the urge. Sergeant, call headquarters. I want Lee Graves in custody before midnight.
What, please, Hop, Gene, or Savvy?
The bedrooms, Hop, bedrooms. We want you to show us which room is Miss Norma's and which is Mr. Tyre's.
Oh, but everybody out now. They'll go office.
All right, we'll go find them ourselves.
Oh, Hop, you take you. They're upstairs.
Please.
Hold on. This is Loom, Captain Ziblada.
Do you see anything, Mike?
No. No, none in this room.
Okay, we'll try Norma's room. Where is it, Hop?
Oh, Missy Norma?
Yeah.
The next one. This is door.
There you are, Mike, over by the window.
Aha, a writing desk. And it's got a green blotter on it.
Well, it doesn't absolutely prove the suicide note was written here.
Mm.
Find some writing on the blotter, Mike?
Yeah.
Can you read it? Wait a minute. It's mostly blur. To whom it may concern, my family knows...
The suicide note. It was written on Norma's desk.
Yes. And I'm wondering just what Miss Norma plans to tell me at 10 o'clock in my apartment, if she has the courage to go through with it.
You mean if she even shows up?
Well, Miss Tyre, you must have been waiting outside for the clock to strike 10.
Hardly. I told him at the office I was going out for some supper.
Let me take your coat, Miss Tyre.
Oh, hello. No, I can't stay long. I like your apartment, Mr. Shane. What the captain would have called a trim berth.
Mm-hmm. I suppose you recognize those docks just off there to your right?
The Tyre Oriental Lines. My father lived his whole life on those ships. He died with one. God had made me a man, that's where I should belong, on the bridge. There's no feeling like it. 12,000 tons of steel alive and straining beneath you. Completely at your command in the lives of all aboard. It means power and mastery.
Miss Tyre, in that note of yours, you said you had to see me.
Yes, Mr. Shane. The past year or so, I've been watching Tom Packer. He's grown to think that he runs the company. When the captain and Milton took that trip to Australia last March, he darn well did run it.
But the captain took over again, didn't he?
Yes, but Packer had tasted power. It seemed to me, Mr. Shane, that there might be a connection between him and Lee Graves.
Hmm?
Packer might be paying Graves to embarrass the Tyre family with those letters to the newspapers. Then at the proper moment, Packer would move in. Well, that's what I wanted to tell you.
Oh, but that would hardly cause the captain to commit suicide. Or do you think Packer and Graves cooked up a murder deal between them?
Well, Tom Packer found the body. See? I've got to go. I shouldn't be away from the office too long. Oh, you won't say anything about this, Mr. Shane.
Oh, of course not.
Good night.
Good night, Miss Tyre.
Good night.
Well, honey?
Yes, yes, a very big well. Mr. Packer says Norma and Uncle Milton want control of the company. They blocked the captain's attempt to change his will. And now Norma throws it right back into Packer's lap.
But the suicide note was written on Norma's desk.
No, that's a gruesome killing for a woman.
Oh, don't make that mistake, honey. We've got to look at her as a person who, for power and mastery, could murder Captain Tyre.
In just a moment, we'll return to Mike Shane and Phyllis Knight in their adventures. Friends, your automobile radiator needs more attention than it gets by just filling it with water now and then. For the cores and water pipes of a radiator are smaller in diameter than the thickness of a lead pencil. That means it doesn't take much in the way of rust, grease, and scale accumulations to block the easy flow of the radiator water. And sluggish water circulation is hard on gas coupons because overheated motors waste gasoline. That's why it's a good idea to drop in at a Union Oil station and ask the Minuteman to clean out your radiator with Union Radiator Flush. This service takes but a few minutes and works like magic. Union radiator flesh is harmless to metal, but its special solvent action cuts scale, rust, and grease right out of choked radiator cores and water lines. Then, when the Minuteman fills your radiator with fresh, clean water, you can be sure it can really circulate with a fast, steady flow. So for cooler driving, economical mileage, just drive in wherever you see the sign of the big orange and blue 76 and ask for Union Oil Radiator Service. Thank you. Mike and Phyllis have had their meeting with the murdered man's niece. They have rejoined the inspector at Captain Tyre's home. The inspector paces the floor thoughtfully.
Assuming, Mike, that everything Norma told you is true, we still haven't turned up a bit of proof.
Correct, Inspector. If Mr. Packer is working with Graves, he isn't going to admit it, and we haven't got a hold of Graves.
What's more important, Mike, the captain wrote that blamed suicide note. The DA can't indict anybody with that thing dangling in front of his nose.
Ah, the inspector's right. We've got murder motives for everybody and no proof that it's even murder.
But it's got to be. We haven't found anything that shows the old captain planned a suicide.
Admitted. There isn't even a suggestion in his diary that anything was wrong.
His diary?
Huh?
A man keeping a diary?
Yeah, Phil, I found it up on that bookshelf while you two were talking with Norma. The captain's log, he called it.
Where is it now?
On the desk.
Mm-hmm. The handwriting matches the suicide note, okay? Last entry was yesterday.
Yeah. Mostly ship sailings and cargoes.
Wait. There's a blank stretch in there.
Yeah. I noticed it. February this year. Captain starts writing again on March 3rd.
Oh, it's just hand scratches. I can't even read it.
But you'll notice on March 5th, the handwriting goes normal again.
Uh-huh.
Anybody can read it. 4 days ago... 4 days out of San Francisco.
That must have been on his trip to Australia.
I checked through the whole diary, Mike. It doesn't mean anything to me.
Perhaps it will, Inspector. Honey, how about ringing for Hopchief, please?
Shall do.
Don't you see, Inspector? The captain was a careful, methodical man. Every page is full of details about the ship line, except for the month of February. A complete blank. What happened in February?
I'll have your job for this. Let go of me.
Here, what goes on?
We finally got Graves, Inspector.
A lot of good it'll do you, you confounded landlubbers.
We picked him up trying to cross the Bay Bridge.
All right, Graves, I guess you know what you're here for.
I do. If you think you can frame me again like Captain Tyre did with that sinking...
Mr. Graves, you came here to see the captain tonight?
I did. To show him the next letter I'm going to mail to the papers unless I get my old berth back. I'm going to ruin my reputation to get away with it.
We're talking about murder, Mr. Graves.
And you want to blame it on me. Captain was dead when I came in.
Yeah? Then why didn't you stick around?
Because I lost my head. I've been blowing around what I do to the captain. I walk in tonight, and there he is dead. So I cut out through the window.
Mike, there's Hopji in the doorway.
Huh? Oh, yes. Oh, Inspector, will you hold it for a minute, Mike?
Oh, this is same man Hopji see before. He killed my captain.
Yes, no, same man, Hop. But look, you see the captain's log here?
Yes, sir.
All right. The captain didn't write anything in it from February 6th to March 3rd of this year. Now, do you know why, Hop?
Oh, captain is sick. Go away. He have stroke.
Stroke? Stroke? Paralysis?
Doctor say stroke. Captain no move leg, no move your arm.
Which leg? Which arm?
Oh, this one.
Of course. That's it, Inspector. Hey, Sergeant. You're going to pick up three more people at the office of the Tyre Oriental Lines.
Well, we're certainly glad you men caught Graves. Has he confessed?
No, Mr. Tyre. Graves did not kill your brother.
Oh? Then it was suicide after all.
Again, no. It was not suicide. It was murder. And you three people knew it was murder. Why didn't you tell us the captain was once paralyzed?
The captain was a proud old man. He made us keep it secret.
He didn't want it to get out among the stockholders or to our competitors.
That was all right while the captain was alive, but not when he's dead. You wanted us to think it was suicide.
You forget, Inspector. We caught you because we did think it was murder. Then when you found that suicide note, it changed things.
It most certainly did not, Mr. Packer. You knew the captain couldn't possibly write that note or plunge the knife into his heart.
All right. Let me put it this way. The captain's suicide will hurt the company, but his murder would hurt even more. I knew it was murder. I suspected Norma or Milton.
And we suspected you.
What? So all three of you kept still, hoping we'd decide it was suicide and accuse Lee Graves. Yet one of you three murdered the captain.
You can't prove that.
Very easily, Miss Tyre. By your answer to just one single question. Where were you during the month of March this year?
Why, right here in San Francisco.
You were here with her, Mr. Packer?
Yes, I was. She represented her family while Milton took the captain on a trip to Australia. The doctor said a sea voyage would help him.
Mm-hmm. The captain had a stroke in February. He couldn't write it in his diary, but once he began his sea voyage, he felt better. On March 3rd, he tried to write in his diary using his left hand.
The writing was impossible to read.
But on the next day, there's an entry which is perfectly normal. It's a very good imitation of the captain's writing.
In fact, it's the same writing on the suicide note.
Oh, no. No.
Oh, yes, Norma. The truth has to be told. You all knew somebody else wrote the captain's diary for him. The only person who was with him on that voyage is Brother Milton.
What? That doesn't say I murdered him. Captain asked me to write the suicide note for him. He killed himself.
You're getting desperate, Mr. Tyre. If your brother couldn't write that note because of a paralyzed arm, he couldn't plunge a knife into his heart. Oh, no. You'll need a better story than that, Mr. Tyre. Especially for a jury.
You know, kids, this was a strange case.
Huh?
Mr. Packer and Norma must have been protecting Milton Tyre from the very start.
Sure. They knew he signed all the captain's papers for him. The old fellow was too proud to let people know he was ailing.
And they protected Brother Milton because they were glad to have the captain out of the way before he changed his will. And they lost their power in the company.
Mm-hmm. A very tight little group.
You know, there's one thing that puzzled me about you, Mike.
Hmm?
You're the one who discovered the suicide note was written on Norma's desk. Yet you never accused her.
Inspector, you should know Mike by now. A woman with a trim ankle is never a killer to Mr. Shane.
Now, Angel. Why, I knew from the start she couldn't be guilty.
Oh, you did?
Sure. You and I both saw her before the killing. We both saw her afterwards. Both times she was wearing the same white blouse with long, frilly cuffs on the sleeves. She couldn't possibly have stabbed the captain without getting blood on those sleeves.
You see, Phil, he does notice what a woman wears.
Uh-huh. I've noticed that he notices. Trouble is, Inspector, it's always the wrong woman.
And again next week at 8 o'clock for another adventure with Michael Shane, Private Detective, starring Wally Mayer and Kathy Lewis, with Joe Forte as the inspector. Tonight's story was written by Richard DeGraff and based on the character created by Brett Halliday. Music was composed and directed by Bernard Katz. This is John Lang saying goodnight for the people who make 76 Gasoline and Triton Motor Oil. Union Oil Company. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System. Time now for Rocky Jordan. Not far from the Mosque Sultan Hassan in Cairo stands the Cafe Tambourine, run by Rocky Jordan. The Cafe Tambourine, crowded with forgotten men, alive with the babble of many languages. For this is Cairo, where modern adventure and intrigue unfold against a backdrop of antiquity. Tonight's story, Bakshish Boy.
I guess it was along about 5 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon. Quite a bunch of river men had wandered up from the docks at Bulak and had kept the tambourine bar busier than usual. But finally, things got under control, so I left Chris alone at the bar and went to replenish our supply of bourbon from the cellar. I had just opened the cellar door when I heard a noise from below. I knew somebody was there ahead of me. I got down the steps just as a ragged little figure dodged back into the shadows and tried to disappear behind a barrel. Hey, come out of there. Hurry up, come out.
No, please, Effendi.
What are you doing down here? What do you want?
I want nothing. I am not stealing. Please.
Then what's the idea? Who are you?
You do not remember me, Jordan Bey? I'm Misa. You gave me baksheesh many times.
Misa? You won't find baksheesh down here.
Oh, I do not ask for baksheesh.
How'd you get in here?
The back door was not locked. Please, let me stay.
Nothing do it. I don't like beggar kids sneaking around my cafe. Now, come on, Uskoot.
No, no, please, Jordan Bey. Your Frankie would not send me out.
What are you hiding from, Misa?
Why, it is just that I do not wish to beg anymore, Effendi.
Then why come here?
I wish to work for you, Effendi. That is why I came to the tambourine.
You thought you'd find me in the cellar, huh?
Please, I could do many things, and I would not be in the way. I could sleep down here.
Nothing doing, Misa. You sleep at home.
Oh, no, no, I must not go back there. I would have to go on begging if I did.
Why not? You seem to get your share of piastres.
But begging is not good, Effendi. I wish to work like other people, and someday have a fine house on the Nile. You will let me stay?
The tambourine is no place for a kid.
Oh, but I could sweep and wash the dishes. I am not strong, but...
No, not a chance. Come on upstairs.
Jordan Bey, if I could just lie down here for a little while. I am tired.
And that's not all. I think we'd better talk this over, Misa.
But I told you I do not wish to beg.
I'll save it till I take the stuff upstairs.
Effendi, you will tell no one that I am here?
Yeah, no promises. I'll be right back.
Please, Effendi, do not tell anyone I'm here. I beg you, Effendi.
I never saw a kid so scared. You need more than 10 fingers to count the kinds of trouble a baksheesh boy can get into around Cairo. Well, I knocked around a certain waterfront back in the States when I was a kid, so I knew what Misa was up against. I set the bottles down under the bar and turned to go back when I saw someone moving toward me through the smoke haze of the cafe. I kept looking. Her close-fitting red dress was a perfect setting for her jet-black hair and hat, black gloves and shoes. Only her purse didn't match. But the sound of her voice made me forget that.
Rocky Jordan?
You came to the right man, lady.
I am Darlene Chambrun.
Darlene Chambrun.
Calcutta, Mr. Jordan.
Oh, Calcutta. Well, let's have a drink to Calcutta, shall we?
Thank you.
Anna, what'll it be?
Please, let us not waste time.
Well,
do not worry. I am not inclined to make trouble.
Well, neither am I, Miss Chambrun.
I will agree to a reasonable deal, if you will.
That all depends, don't you think?
Look, I am the one to handle it, not you. Not if you are smart.
Well, let's see if I'm smart, after I've heard the deal.
Well, very well, we will split 70-30.
I guess I don't have to ask who gets the 70.
Naturally, I do. After all, I did all the work, didn't I?
So far you have. Miss Chambrun, suppose you brief me a little, just what's this all about?
Mr. Jordan, I do not understand.
That goes double, lady.
Please, there is no need to stall.
You say a lot, Miss Chambrun, but it doesn't mean anything.
Wait, Mr. Jordan, you do know who I am.
Sure. You're Darlene Chambrun, Calcutta. You have a deal.
It is possible that there has been a mistake. I am sorry.
Well, let's not let that stand between us. How about that drink, Miss Chambrun? We'll talk about something else.
No. Kindly forget about it, Mr. Jordan. Forget everything.
Well, sure. We all make mistakes.
I am very sorry, Mr. Jordan. If you accept my apologies, I will be going.
She didn't wait for an answer and floated toward the door. About halfway there, she hesitated, threw a quick look back at me, then she went out. But the perfume hung around for a while. I wondered how soon she'd be back. It was time I got rid of the beggar boy hiding in my cellar, so I started back through the office. Right then, I saw I'd forgotten to lock the back door to the alley again. Standing there, peering in, was a shabby native with sharp black eyes and dirty fingernails.
One moment, Effendi.
Customer's entrance is out front.
Wait. You must know that I would not enter your cafe, Mr. Jordan. I would have a word with you.
What about?
It is about a beggar boy named Misa. Many times I have seen you talking with him on the streets.
Oh, I know him.
Effendi. He has been missing for many hours. I was told he was seen entering this door not long ago.
Why are you so interested?
I am his father. My name is Signac.
So that's it.
The Afranchi will surely understand. I have been most worried. Never has Missa done this before.
You miss that bakshi she brings home, huh?
There are many of us who are begging Cairo, Effendi. What else can we do?
Okay, Signac, you can take him off my hands. Get him out of here, quick.
Then Missa is here.
Yeah, he's here, hiding in my basement. Come on.
Allah will reward you, Effendi.
Sure, sure. Come on out, Missa. Signac's here. Missa, where are you?
Missa! He is not here, Jordan Bay.
Looks like he skipped out. I can't say I'm sorry.
You told me he was here. Where is he, Missa?
Your guess is as good as mine. Now, come on, no need to look around here any longer. Upstairs with you.
Now you know where Missa is, you tell me.
Look, Senor, I told you he's gone.
I do not believe you.
Hey, by the way, what was he hiding for?
I do not know. You cannot keep him, Jordan Bay. You are safe. I will call the police.
Go ahead. There's a payphone out front.
Enough. I will give you a little time. You'll see.
Beat it, Signac.
Then perhaps when the Inglese feels this...
Pick up that knife and get out of here.
Salama!
Just to make sure, I looked for Mesa a little more, but he was gone. I told myself good riddance, but it didn't work. His scared face stayed with me. Well, along in the evening, I finally decided to go out and scout around for my little beggar friend. Baragit, the picture card salesman a couple of corners down, told me where Misa lived, in an infested alley off the Sharia El Nus. It was no place for an Inglese to be after dark, especially with a knife-swinging rat like Signac shadowing along. But I found Misa's address. A sallow-faced girl answered my knock.
Effendi?
Why, I'd like to speak with the head of the house.
Only I am here. There is no one else, Effendi.
Oh. Well, I'm Rocky Jordan.
Rocky Jordan. Misa has told me of you. You are his friend?
That's right. Are you...
I am Tarina, his sister. Please come inside quickly. Mr. Jordan, where is Misa? You must tell me.
I was hoping you could tell me, Tarina.
Misa has been gone for many hours. I fear he is in trouble.
Why?
The police were here. They are looking for him, too.
I see. What about?
I do not know. Oh, Mr. Jordan, Misa must beg. But he is a good boy. He has been so afraid, but he would not tell me why.
How does his father feel about it?
Father, Effendi, we have no father or mother.
Then who's Signac?
Signac. He is Misa's employer.
Employer?
Signac has many bakshish boys working for him. He tell them where to beg. They must turn over money to him. He let them have only small part.
Sweet little racket.
But, Effendi, I fear that recently he has forced the boys to do more than beg.
Yeah.
Mr. Jordan, you will find Misa for me. You will not let them harm him.
Well, I'll do what I can, Tarina. Here, maybe you can use this.
Oh, mutashakir, Effendi.
I left Tarina there and got out of the native quarter fast. I halfway hoped Signac would make a play, but he didn't. It was after closing when I got back to the tambourine. I'd gotten out the key to open the front door when I saw that wasn't necessary. The lock had already been broken. I got inside and turned on the light. The place looked like a calm scene had swept through it. I hurried back to the office. That was even worse. The search had been complete, even to the safe which swung open. The sound of footsteps was from my room upstairs, so I went up two at a time. Inside, the light was on, and a flat-nosed man in a business suit stood waiting. Before I could move again, my arms were pinned from behind.
What do you want, move?
Did I keep you waiting?
Not too long. You can save us any further search.
What?
He doesn't know, Mado.
Maybe I can help him remember.
Give me your idea. We'll compare notes.
Enough of these, Jordan. We don't want to hurt you.
Maybe we do.
The beggar boy came directly to the tambourine. He was seen. So don't deny it.
Why should I?
I thought you would be smart.
Misa's not here.
We ain't looking for the kid no more. Look, you won't fool us, Jordan.
Hey, wait a minute. Did you send that dame to the tambourine this afternoon?
Maybe we did.
I'll do the talking, Mado. Now, Jordan, turn it over and we'll get out.
Turn what over?
Oh.
Where is it, Jordan?
Ask Signac. Kid took everything to him.
We're going to get rough, boss.
You just hold him, Marco. I'll handle the rest. Won't I, Jordan?
Sure. I'll handle this. I suddenly lurched forward, and Marta went right over my head. I landed on the guy with the flat nose, and they both piled up. Marta was a bum, but he was fast. He caught me before I reached the door. My fist slowed him up, but his boss dived in from behind. Then they went to work on me. One went down, another came up in his place. Finally, I started going down. About then, we all threw away the rules. A chair caught the side of my head, bounced me against the floor. I was on my feet, but my knees were jelly. This time, I didn't see him swing.
You are listening to Bakshish Boy, tonight's adventure with Rocky Jordan. Here's a bulletin for mystery fans. The door creaks open tomorrow, Monday night at 9 for Inner Sanctum. And Tuesday night, Mr. and Mrs. North bring you another enjoyable clue and chuckle show at 8:30, followed by Inspector Hearthstone of the Death Squad at 9. Yes, and these are just a few of the fine mystery programs which will come to you next week over your local CBS station. So follow your papers and stand by CBS for mystery. And now we return you to Cairo and tonight's adventure with Rocky Jordan.
A beggar boy named Misa picked the cellar of my tambourine to hide in. That's how it all began. He was scared, and I didn't have the heart to kick him out. A couple of minutes later, in came a dame who called herself Darlene Chambron. She had a deal, but she did a fade before she told me what it was. Next in line was a shabby native named Signac, who carried a knife he didn't use to clean his fingernails. He said he was Misa's father, so we went to get the boy. But Misa was gone, and Signac made a lot of threats. Later, I learned that Signac wasn't the boy's father. He was the head of a dirty begging syndicate Misa was working for. Last came a flat-nosed fellow and his muscle boy who tore up the tambourine looking for something. They ended up by slapping me around, and I went down for the count. I was just picking myself up when I saw Misa again, standing in the doorway and looking more scared than ever.
What has happened, Effendi?
Misa, where have you been?
I was close by. You are hurt, Jordan. I will get water.
No, you won't get anything, Misa.
But, Effendi, you said that perhaps I could work for you.
Not in your life. You realize you dumped me right in the middle of this trouble?
Oh, I am most sorry.
Sure you are. Look, a guy named Signac came looking for you. Where'd you go?
When I saw Signac coming, I ran away. I do not wish to work for him.
Some other fellows are looking for you, including the police. Suppose I just turn you over to them, huh?
No, do not do that.
Now, why shouldn't I?
Jordan Bay, I will tell you everything. Everything I know.
Oh, that's better. All right, now, Misa, let's have it.
Effendi, this man, Signac, had many boys who begged for him. But he has been making us do more than that.
Like what?
He taught us to steal things from tourists in the crowded bazaar.
I thought so.
2 days ago, I grabbed a purse from a beautiful lady and ran. She saw me, but I got away. It was not easy.
What did you do with the purse?
I took it to Signac. He kept only the money and told me to hide the purse. Since then, Effendi, many things have happened. Things I do not understand.
Like what?
Strange people are looking for me. Always they are following me. 2 men were chasing me when I came here to hide. There was no place else to go.
Go on.
That is all I know.
Just what did you do with that woman's purse?
I hid it away with some other things.
I'd like to see that purse, Misa.
Come, Jordan Bay. I will take you to where it is.
Misa and I went out the back way. We made sure we weren't being tailed, and I followed him through the dark, winding streets. We turned up an alley that seemed to be a hangout for 500,000 cats that infest Cairo at night. He opened the door to an abandoned shed. I kept my flashlight on, so we got inside.
This way, Jordan Bay. It is here somewhere.
Misa lifted a board from the floor, and I played the light inside. If it hadn't been so serious, I'd have laughed. It was the usual pile of useless junk that any young boy treasures. Misa scratched around and pulled out a red purse from underneath.
This is the one.
Oh, here. Hold the light, Misa. Have a look.
Yes, Effendi.
You're sure everything's here?
Everything but the money, I'm sure.
Lipstick, compact, mirror, handkerchief. Nothing else but this envelope.
Do you see anything?
No. Turn the light on this envelope.
What does the writing say?
Shepherd Hotel stationery. Addressed to Darlene Chambon.
You know her, Effendi?
Yeah. Darlene Chambon, 46 Rue de la Marcale, Paris, France. All stamped and ready to mail.
Will you read the letter?
I don't see why not. It isn't sealed.
There is no writing, Effendi.
Just a blank sheet of paper.
But why would one wish to mail a letter with no writing?
Answer that one, Misa. You might explain a lot of things. Put the stuff back in the purse. I'm taking it with me.
Yes, Effendi. But what shall I do?
Nothing. Not till you hear from me. Just lay low and keep away from the tambourine. I had a hunch the self-addressed envelope held the answer. I sized up the three possible links. Darlene, the man with the flat nose, and Signac. If I knew people, Signac was the weakest link. Misa told me where Signac lived, and I went out hunting. I found his room up over a curio shop in the Khan El Khalil Bazaar. There was no answer to my knock, so I tried the door. It opened. I found the light switch and moved in. But the search was still on. The room had received the same treatment as my room at the tambourine an hour before. It was wrecked, drawers empty, clothes torn to bits. I stopped at the bed. Signac hadn't been treated as gently as I was. He was crumbled, and his face wasn't a pretty sight. That happens to a man when he's strangled. I still didn't know what Misa had grabbed with the purse, but it wasn't peanuts. So after tipping off the police, I hung up quick. I wasn't ready to tell him any more. I caught a taxi and was off to see link number 2 at the Shepherd Hotel. Darlene Chambon was registered there, but she wasn't in her room, so I scouted the lobby and then the cocktail lounge. She was there, seated alone at a table. I invited myself over.
Your order, madam?
Bring me a daiquiri, please.
Make it 2, waiter.
Wait, Mr. Jordan.
Didn't expect me, Darlene?
Well, I... Why did you come here?
Oh, doing the town, you might say. Just dropped in on Signac.
Signac?
He didn't talk much. He was dead.
I haven't the slightest idea what you're talking about. Who is this Signac?
You don't know?
I do not.
My mistake this time.
Now we are even. Is that all?
Not quite. I'm still interested in that deal you came to the tambourine about this afternoon.
I told you that was a mistake, so forget about it.
Okay, we'll forget about it.
Your drinks, monsieur et madame?
No. Here you are.
Thank you, monsieur.
Well, darling, to Calcutta.
To Calcutta.
Say, I like that red dress you're wearing.
Well, you sound almost human for a change. What else do you like?
Black hat, gloves. You know, there's just one thing lacking.
Yes?
The red patent leather purse. Zipper type.
Mr. Jordan, you do have it.
Yeah, including an envelope stamped and addressed to Darlene Chambon, Paris. But no writing inside.
Where is it? It belongs to me, Mr. Jordan. I must have it.
And then the deal's on again?
Why did you not tell me this at the tambourine?
I didn't have it then. Misa just gave it to
me. Misa?
The beggar boy.
You mean the one who stole the purse from me in the bazaar?
Uh-huh. Ever since then, he's been running from you and a guy with a flat nose and Signac and the police and everyone else. Why?
He's been robbing people.
Come on, darling. Just what's so valuable about an envelope without a letter?
That's my business. Now give it to me.
I'm sorry. I left it in my other coat.
Very well. Bring it to me and I will give you £100.
Supposing I just take it to the police.
£200, Rocky.
On delivery?
I'll have it for you.
Well, I meet you.
Meet me here, in the lobby, in front of the elevators.
I'll be there. Give me an hour.
I'll be waiting.
Darlene stayed at her table, and I moved out into the lobby. I stopped by the desk and said hello to my friend Archie, the night clerk, who was sorting some hotel stationery. Then I moved out. It was getting late, and there wasn't a taxi at the door, so I walked on down along Ibrahim Pasha Square. The theaters were just letting out, and the sidewalks were crowded. All at once, I felt a violent tug at my sleeve.
Bakshish, Effendi! Bakshish!
It was Misa, but he pretended not to recognize me, so I played along with him.
Bakshish, Effendi!
Aya, Yatik! Talk fast, Misa. Where'd you come from?
I've been watching you for Jordan. Two men are following you. One with a flat nose.
Look, want to help, Misa?
Yes, Effendi. What shall I do?
See those cops on the corner? Grab something. Make them chase you.
Yes, but
hurry,
Effendi!
Hurry. Lead them across the square to the front of the Cairo Bank. You game, Misa?
I will do it for you, Jordan.
Quick as you can. Imshi, now.
Yes, Effendi.
I flipped him a piastre and he disappeared. I kept walking across the square down a side street. My two shadows were just a half block behind. I let him get closer and then I started running. So did they. I kept them moving around a couple of side streets, then up another alley. They decided the chase had gone far enough. A bullet combed my hair and I stepped it up. They kept coming and fired at me. I reached the street, ducked around the corner in front of the Cairo Bank and waited. I stuck my foot out at the right second and the man with the flat nose hit the sidewalk. Right in front of Sergeant Greco and two burly Egyptian cops.
Stop! Both of you!
Grab him, Greco! Hang on!
Mr. Jordan, what is going on here?
You see their guns? They were shooting at me.
Pull them, Bullock. Take their guns. Now, Mr. Jordan, what is this all about?
Oh, I'll explain everything to Sabaya. Just take them down.
I don't need instructions. Come along with them. Bring the boy, too.
Hey, wait a minute, Greco. Not the beggar kid. He didn't do anything.
You are mistaken, Mr. Jordan. I saw him grab a man's wallet with my own eyes. This boy is coming to headquarters.
You are listening to Bakshish Boy, tonight's adventure with Rocky Jordan. Street with No Name, starring Mark Stevens, Richard Widmark, and Lloyd Nolan, will be presented by CBS Radio Theater Monday night at 6. This exciting story broke box office records when shown on the screen. So don't miss the radio adaptation tomorrow, Monday night at 6, over your local CBS station. And following Radio Theater, you'll want to stay tuned to CBS for My Friend Irma, and another laugh-filled half-hour with Irma, Jane Stacy, Professor Kropotkin, and of course Irma's boyfriend, Al. That's Monday night at 7. And now we take you back to Cairo and Rocky Jordan for tonight's adventure, Bakshish Boy.
I waited in front of the bank just long enough to see Sergeant Greco take my two followers and little Misa away. Then I got to a payphone and put in a call to Captain Sabaya, Cairo Police.
Sabaya speaking.
Hello, Sam. This is Rocky.
Jordan, unless you have a good reason for calling at this time of night...
Hey, listen. Sergeant Greco's on his way down there with a flat-nosed guy in his hood.
And how does this concern you?
The two guys were shooting at me.
Why?
I don't know exactly. They wrecked my tambourine a couple hours ago, too.
So? Why did you not report this wrecking of your cafe?
Listen, Sam, hold those guys. They may be tied up in the murder of Signac.
Sir, Jordan, it was you who reported Signac's murder.
Yeah, that's right, Sam.
I should have known you had a reason for not giving your name. Tell me what it is all about, Jordan.
That's what I'm trying to find out.
You are trying to find out. Are you not aware that there are police in Cairo for that purpose?
Watch the blood pressure, Sam. I'll get down there as soon as I can.
You will come down here at once.
Oh, one more thing. Do me a favor, will you?
A favor? After the way you have cooperated?
It's important, Sam. Greco's got a little beggar boy named Misa with him. Go easy on the kid till I get there, will you?
And what will you be doing?
I'll explain everything. So long, Sam. The one thing I didn't tell him was about my date with Darlene Chambron. I taxied back to the tambourine and got the envelope. It took me just a few minutes to get ready, and a quarter hour later, I was back in the lobby of the Shepherd Hotel. I was a little early, but Darlene was waiting right by the elevator.
You are very prompt, Rocky.
I'm never too busy.
You brought the envelope?
Yeah, it's right in my pocket. What about the money?
May I see the envelope first?
Sure. There you are, Darlene. That's the one?
Why, yes. Thank you, Rocky.
What are you doing?
Sealing it. And now...
Hey, wait a minute.
Now it is in the mailbox. You are too late, Rocky.
Okay, do what you like with it. Let's get to the payoff.
Sorry, the deal's off again.
What?
You want the letter back? Try and get it. I'm afraid the postal authorities wouldn't like it.
That's the way it is?
That's the way it is. Don't be a poor loser, Rocky.
Okay, darling. It's like you outsmarted me.
Things work out my way.
Well, since the letter's gone, won't you let me do some guessing?
Go right ahead.
Since it was an ordinary envelope from the Shepherd Hotel, there was nothing inside, there's only one place where anything of value could be hidden. Under the stamp.
Keep going, Rocky.
Another stamp, maybe.
Post Office Mauritius, 1847. Worth at least $20,000.
Misa did grab something hot, didn't he? Where'd you get it?
Let's just say I picked it up in Calcutta. We needn't go into that.
No, I can guess. Where does a man with a flat nose come in?
His name is Hans Walden. He was going to help me to dispose of the stamp.
And when Misa got it from you, Walden and his pal were helping you find it, right?
Yes. Turned out I didn't need them.
You need them less now. They got you into a nice little murder rap. It won't be hard to prove they killed Signac.
Walden's smart enough to keep undercover.
Think again, lady. Walden's at headquarters talking to the police right now.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Suppose he tells them the whole story about that hot stamp.
Supposing he does. Why do you think I carried it the way I did, ready to mail? If things got too hot, I planned to just drop it in the mailbox. No evidence.
Like you just did.
Certainly. The stamp is safe until I get to Paris. I doubt that anyone will follow me. Unless you'd like to, Rocky.
Oh, that won't be necessary, darling.
Why not?
Your stamp isn't going to Paris.
What do you mean?
You didn't take a good look at that letter I gave you. It was a phony. I copped a Shepherd Hotel envelope from the desk when I went out. That's the one you mailed.
I don't believe you.
Maybe if I show you the real envelope, you'll change your mind.
You're lying, Rocky.
Here. Take a look at this.
Rocky.
There's something under this stamp. A post office, Mauritius, 1847. Fair game, darling.
Give me that. Give me that.
Keep shouting. You'll bring the house detective.
What are you going to do with it, Rocky?
Take it where it belongs, the Cairo police. Got an idea. Somebody back in Calcutta will be glad to hear about it. If not, you can pick it up at headquarters.
But why? What good will it be to you?
Nothing. But there's a boy named Mesa who needs a lot of help. I figure maybe Captain Sophia will return one favor with another.
And what about me?
Miss Chambrou, I guess you'd be at least 26 years old. That means you've gotten along without my advice for 26 years. See no reason to change that now. I turned and made for the door, but Darlene just stood there. Sam told me she was still there when his boys walked in a short time later. Well, Walden and his playmate are out of circulation for a long time. Oh, about Misa. Sophia got probation for him. My cafe was no place to have a young boy around, so we got him a job as a camel tender. So Misa's happy, and he won't be begging anymore. And me? Oh, I'm still at the tambourine. Only someday I'm going to learn to keep that back door locked.
It's CBS again at this same time next week for another story of adventure and intrigue when we take you back to Cairo and the Cafe Tambourine run by Rocky Jordan. Jack Moyles plays the title role with tonight's story by Gomer Kuhl and Larry Roman. Rocky Jordan is produced and directed by Cliff Powell with original music by Milton Charles. Larry Thor speaking. This is CBS. The Columbia Broadcasting System.
Ellery Queen's Minute Mysteries. This is Ellery Queen with a case I call The Genuine Article. A rich American woman named Carlyle came to me to check on a man who wanted to marry her. He claims he's a member of the House of Lords, she told me. He showed me photos of his manor house in Scotland and an apartment in Edinburgh, but seriously, I think he's a fraud. What makes you so sure, I asked. She replied, he told me he was elected to the House of Lords. They're not elected, they're appointed by the Queen. What do you think? In a moment, my answer. In the case of the genuine article, the man was indeed that. He was from Scotland, where some members of the House of Lords of the British Parliament are elected. Miss Carlyle, now Mrs. McTavish, has moved to Scotland.
Listen again to Ellery Queen's Minute Mysteries.
This is the Ford Theater, an hour of radio drama presented by the Ford Motor Company, makers of Ford, Mercury, and Lincoln cars, and Ford trucks, tractors, and motor coaches. Today's play, Ellery Queen's The Adventure of the Bad Boy. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Howard Lindsay speaking. Welcome to the Ford Theater, which begins today its second calendar year. During 1948, if you care to join us here each Sunday afternoon, you will encounter at this hour just about every sort of dramatic entertainment possible to radio. In the Ford Theater, the play's the thing. And in choosing plays, the management aims at quality, contrast, and variety. Last week, an original radio comedy. Next week, a great motion picture adapted for radio. And this week, mystery. This week, the Ford Theater presents The Adventure of the Bad Boy by Ellery Queen. Now, there's a man I've always envied, Ellery Queen. He gets around so much, meets so many different kinds of interesting people, alive and dead. In the last few years, on paper and on the air, Ellery must have averaged one mysterious murder case per week, each neatly solved in the end with the culprit delivered over to justice. And not only does young Mr. Queen solve the mystery, he writes the story, too, between calls for help from the homicide squad. Also, of late, he's found time to edit an excellent magazine for detective story fans, to pen learned dissertations on the gentle art of mystery fiction, and to publish, just last month, an anthology of choice crime tales. He's a versatile man, Ellery, and a busy one. He is also, by this time, a legendary hero, an American Sherlock Holmes, with thousands of worshipful followers. We know that he's the son of gruff, steely-eyed, snuff-using Inspector Richard Queen, who can always be reached at police headquarters on Center Street, Manhattan. And we know that he employs as his secretary the beautiful, worshipful, long-suffering Nikki, who even now is typing up a forthcoming chapter in the multitudinous works of Ellery Queen. Meanwhile, Ellery relaxes in an armchair, deep in thought.
Because, Mr. Figgerson, nature is maddeningly logical, said Ellery Queen. A bird flies, the sun rises, a river flows, and a wound bleeds. Underline, and a wound bleeds. End of chapter.
Ellery? Ellery, where are you?
In the armchair, Nikki.
I'm finished.
Lucky girl.
Are you kidding?
Huh?
Well, all you have to do is dictate these foul mystery masterpieces of yours. I have to type them, remember? I said, remember?
What, Nikki?
Oh, skip it. You haven't actually seen me for years, now you don't even hear me.
Nikki, I'm sorry.
Think nothing of it. After all, who am I? Birth of the typing machine, girl. Even in the sweatshop, the boss made a pass once in a while.
I'm sorry, Nikki, but I've been deep in thought.
Really?
About a little boy, Nikki.
About a what?
A little boy.
Why, Ellery.
Yes, it's time I did something about that situation.
You're the screwiest character, Ellery. You would find a different way to do it.
Do what?
Oh, now we're being coy again. Most men would start the other way around. With the little boy's mother.
Very nice woman, I'm told.
Why, thank you. Coming from you, Ellery, that's a lavish compliment. I don't know. I'll have to think about it.
Oh, you don't have to think about it, Nikki. It's really my problem.
Why, you egotist.
Well, I didn't think you'd be interested.
Ellery, why do you think I've held on to this thankless, frustrating job all these years? Interested? The first thing we'll have to do is tell your father.
Dad? Oh, no, Nikki, not quite yet.
Not yet? Why keep it a secret from the inspector?
Because I'm not familiar with all the facts, Nikki.
Facts?
Yes, it might not even be a matter for the police at all.
Police?
Yes, I'll know more about it as soon as Dr. Milton gets here. Which, incidentally, ought to be any minute now.
But Ellery,
Nikki,
you...
would you clear away all this truck? Of course, if you want to sit down and on it, I'll be very glad to have you make notes.
Ellery Queen. Exactly what little boy were you talking about?
Hmm? Bobby Hayes.
Bobby Hayes, hmm? And the nice woman?
Bobby's mother, of course. Frances Hayes.
I see. You fiend!
Why, Nikki, what's the matter?
No, nothing. Nothing at all. No, don't you dare come near me.
I don't seem to follow this at all. Oh, of course. You don't know a thing about this case, do you? And here I've been talking as if you knew all about it.
Yes. Ha, ha, ha.
Well, you just sit right down here by the fire, and I'll tell you the whole story. That is, if you'd like to hear it, Nikki.
Oh, I'm simply fascinated.
Well, to begin with, I first got to know about it when Dr. Milton phoned me. And he got the story from the principals. His landlady, Sarah Brink, a spinster, who owns a small apartment house in Greenwich Village. And Sarah Brink's unfortunate sister, Frances. Frances Hayes. Mrs. Hayes and her little boy, Bobby, who's 8, live with Sarah Brink. I think it was 4 nights ago that it began.
Bobby?
Yeah?
Yeah. Can't you say yes, Auntie? What is it? Bobby? Bobby Brink.
My name is not Bobby Brink.
Well, it is in this house.
It is not, Aunt Sarah. It's Bobby Hayes.
Bobby, how dare you take that tone with me?
It is so, Hayes. That's my father's name. That's Mommy's name. So it's my name, too. I know my own name, I guess.
Your father's a bad man, Bobby. He ran away. Left you and your mother alone.
He did not. Mommy says he's dead.
Well, it'd be a mercy if he were. At least you and your mother'd have his insurance.
Insurance? What's that, Aunt Sarah?
Never you mind. Bobby. Bobby, put the funnies down for a minute.
Do I have to?
Bobby, dear, don't you feel just a little bit grateful to Aunt Sarah?
Huh?
When Auntie takes her sister into her home and her sister's little boy gives them nice soft beds to sleep in and good things to eat, even money to spend. Don't you think the little boy ought to sort of, love his Auntie?
Oh, I don't get so much money to spend.
Oh, you're a wicked ungrateful boy. What have you been up to in here while I've been making supper in the kitchen? Answer me, Bobby. Some mischief, I'll bet.
I'm not doing nothing. I'm just reading the funnies.
Chasing the cat, most likely.
I was not. I've been reading a radio page.
Oh? You miss all those nice programs since your mother's radio got broken. Accidentally. Don't you, Bobby, dear?
Aunt Cheryl, couldn't we have it fixed? I gotta ask the fellas all the time what's happening to Superman.
Fix it? Now, Bobby, listen to me. How would you like Aunt Sarah to buy you a nice new radio? Maybe a television set. Just for you.
Gee, Aunt Sarah, would you? Why?
Well, maybe. If you gave me a real big kiss once in a while, Bobby. Who's there? Francis, is that you?
Yes, Sarah. Oh, Bobby, son.
Hi, Mom.
Wow. Superman, that's some hug. Ah, darling, what did you do today, huh? Oh, something wrong, Sarah?
Yes, he was a bad boy, Francis, as usual. I declare, I don't see why you don't...
Why, you're always snitching.
Bobby.
Mom, I played with the fellas in the park and a cop chased us just because we were climbing an old tree.
Well, you might have fallen, dear.
And that's not all.
Yeah, snitch some more, Aunt Sarah. I threw a rock, Mom.
Oh, Bobby, you did.
Just a little hunk of rock. Couldn't have hurt nobody. And it just happened to break a window.
There, Francis. Are you satisfied now?
Oh, that was wrong, Bobby. And I've told you so many times, you mustn't talk to your Aunt Sarah this way.
If you'd stay home and take care of your child, Francis, instead of prancing round all day...
I wasn't prancing, Sarah. I was walking my legs off looking for a job.
Oh, you and your jobs. Your first duty is to your child. You know you don't have to have a job, Francis, as long as you live with me.
Yes, Sarah. I know.
Coming home at all hours. Supper's ruined. It is. It is. My stew. It's burning. Just in time.
I don't want your old stew. I don't like stew.
Bobby, you're not having stew. What would you say to a nice raspberry jelly omelet?
Huh? Jelly omelet? Wow.
Well, just as soon as I set these two plates of stew down, I'll fix your omelet, Bobby. Francis, hurry, will you? For pity's sake, Bobby, now you stop playing with that canary's cage.
Oh, Bobby, didn't hear what Aunt Sarah said. Now stop it.
Oh, okay, Mom. And can I have prune juice too, Aunt Sarah, huh?
Why, certainly you may, Bobby, dear. Bobby, Brig, now see what you've gone and done, leaving the canary's cage open.
Oh, Bobby, there goes the canary. Sarah, catch him.
Oh, of all the spoiled, misbehaving brats.
If we could only...
There he is, Francis. Catch him. Catch him.
I got him. No. Oh, dear. Oh. Now he's flown up on the chandelier. Oh, Bobby.
Come down here, Dretcher.
Sarah, shut the dining room door. He'll fly out.
Shut the window, Francis.
Yes, Sarah. Look out, the cat!
Columbus! Columbus! Stop that, you bad cat, you!
Sarah, I think I could... Got him!
Well, it's about time.
You naughty canary, back you go. There.
Are you quite finished, Francis? Well... Now, Bobby Brink, suppose you tell me why you opened that canary's cage and why you've been sitting at the supper table and haven't so much as lifted a finger to help catch him.
I don't care. I was just playing with the old bird. He flew past me, the dirty old bird.
Bobby Hayes, what's come over you? Bobby, come here.
What?
Son, you've always been so kind to Aunt Sarah's pets. But now you chase Columbus, torment the canary, go fishing in the goldfish bowl. Do you like tormenting animals and birds and fish?
Oh, Mom, I didn't hurt him.
Well, I suppose that lets him off. Kindness, reasonableness. Trouble is, Francis, you don't discipline him. If he were mine,
but he isn't, Sarah. Some would talk about this after supper.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, eat your stew, Francis.
Yes, Sarah.
I suppose I might as well eat mine, too, even if it is icy cold by now. Well, what's the matter, Francis? Isn't my stew good enough for you?
Bobby's omelet, Sarah. You've forgotten.
Oh, have I?
Bobby, I'll make it for
you. Sit down.
Sarah, please.
I've told you 1,000 times, Francis. I won't have you or anybody else messing in my kitchen. Bobby'll wait for his supper, since he's spoiled ours.
Well, Sarah, the stew can be reheated.
As if my gas bills aren't high enough as it is. He'll wait.
Bobby, I won't eat until...
Oh, go ahead, Mom. I can wait. I'm not hungry anyway.
Thank you, son.
Every time we sit down to eat, that awful fiddling starts. I declare that foreigner does it on purpose just to annoy me.
That's only Mr. Weber downstairs, Aunt Sarah. He likes to play that song.
Bobby.
Oh, I must have been insane when I rented that apartment to him. Fiddler playing. I'll have him evicted, that's what I'll do. I'll have him thrown right out into the street. Him and his nasty fiddle.
Well, don't stop there, Ellery. What happened then?
Then, Nicky, they finished their supper. Sarah Brink made Bobby a jelly omelet, which he devoured with great relish, while his mother began to clear the table.
Boy, that was good.
Oh, you liked it, Bobby.
Bobby, the stew is delicious, Sarah. Bobby, you may leave the table.
But, Mommy, why can't I have a piece of apple pie? I'm especially hungry for a piece of apple pie.
I've already told you, Bobby, if your mother won't punish you, I will.
You're just mean.
Oh, I am, am I?
Bobby, please, I told you to leave the table.
Oh, downstairs and see Mr. Gordini, I promise.
You certainly may not. Sarah, aren't you forgetting that I'm Bobby's mother?
I've told you and told you, Francis, letting a young child spend all of his time with that worthless, greasy actor.
He's as nice as anyone you know, Sarah. Bobby, you may visit Mr. Gordini for a half an hour, then come upstairs to bed.
Gee, thanks, Mom.
Bobby, wait. Bobby, I forbid you. I forbid you. Do you understand? You are not to go downstairs. And Francis, just as long as you live in my home on my money, you'll do as I say. Is that clear? I can't stand this anymore. Always throwing up to me how dependent I am on your charity. Trying to run my life, my child. Because we have no other place to live. So I'm going to leave. I'd rather starve.
Oh, stop that silly crying, Francis. If you'd listened to me, you wouldn't have been deserted by that no-good husband of yours and left penniless to support a child. I was good enough to take you in, and I'm good enough to dictate what's best for you.
No, I'll take Bobby and get out of here.
Well, if you want to live in the street, I suppose you're of age, but you're supposed to love this child. What are you going to feed him on? Kisses?
Mom? Mom? I don't want to see Mr. Gordini. It's okay. I'll go right to bed, Mommy.
It's all right, Bobby. You may go downstairs. Please, Bobby. Go on now, dear.
No. He's staying here. Bobby Brink, if you set foot outside this apartment, I...
Oh, Sarah. Oh, why, Francis, I feel so funny. Sarah, what's the matter?
Mommy and Sarah fell down.
Sarah, my throat... Stomach. Oh, fire. Can't breathe. Bobby, run downstairs for Dr. Melton. Quick!
Attempted poisoning.
I'm afraid so, Nikki. Curious case.
Not that I condone it, but it seems understandable. What an old bat. She owns the house, huh?
Yes, one of those old three-story brownstones facing Washington Square Park. She's converted it into a four-family apartment house. The Brinks apartment's on the top floor. Dr. Melton lives on the ground floor. And the intermediate floor is occupied by two tenants. Weber, a refugee who teaches the violin. And Gordini, who seems to be an actor.
But, Ellery, they can't possibly have anything to do with it.
Ah, that's Dr. Melton.
I'll go.
Yes?
I'm Dr. Melton, and this is Miss Sarah Brink.
Come in, Doctor.
Dr. Melton and Miss Sarah Brink, Ellery.
Well, how do you do?
Evening. Miss Brink's the patient I phoned to you about, Mr. Queen. Easy now, Miss Brink, please.
Here's a chair. Thank you.
Sit down, Dr. Melton. Oh, this is my secretary, Miss Porter.
How do you do, Miss Porter?
How do you do?
I must say I'm a little surprised, Doctor, to see Miss Brink with you.
She's still pretty shaky, but I thought we'd risk it, Mr. Queen, even though it's only 4 days since...
The accident. The accident.
Now, don't excite yourself, please.
I told you, Dr. Melton, it was some sort of accident. Oh, I don't know why I've let you bring me here, a detective.
Miss Brink, it couldn't have been an accident.
Oh, dear.
What do you suspect, Doctor?
I don't suspect. I know. Miss Brink was poisoned.
By accident.
You're asserting that not as a theory, Doctor, but as a fact.
Judge for yourself. I know you've had some experience with these things, Mr. Queen.
Yes?
Miss Brink ate on an empty stomach. About 10 minutes later, she fell writhing to the floor.
Symptoms?
Burning pain in throat and stomach. Intense thirst. Collapse. Cyanosed skin. Difficult respiration. Cramps in the calves of the legs.
Arsenical poisoning.
Yes.
How awful.
I suppose you had the remains of Miss Brink's portion of stew analyzed, Dr. Melton.
Of course. It was heavily dosed with arsenic.
Miss Brink, who are your heirs?
My heirs?
Yes.
Well, my sister Frances. She's my only living relative.
Your sister and her little boy, you mean. He's your nephew, isn't he, Miss Brink?
Yes.
Comfortably fixed, are you?
Well, I own my own house, have a few thousand dollars.
Any domestic help?
I do my old housework and cooking. Can't afford servants.
I see. Dr. Melton.
Yes, Mr. Queen?
I believe you said Mrs. Hayes, Miss Brink's sister, ate stew that evening and showed no ill effects.
None at all.
Well, obviously, then. Only the stew on your plate, Miss Brink, was poisoned. Was your sister in the kitchen at any time during the preparation or cooking of the stew?
Why, Frances was away all day. She didn't get back till a few minutes before I fetched the two plates of stew from the kitchen and set them on the dining room table.
Was your nephew in the kitchen while you were cooking?
Bobby?
Yes.
Oh, no. No, not at any time.
And after you set the plates down on the dining room table, Miss Brink,
Did your sister have an opportunity to drop arsenic into your plate?
I tell you, it was an accident.
Did she?
No, no. Just as I set the plates down, Bobby let the canary escape, and Francis and I began to chase it.
I know that, Miss Brink. I just wanted to be sure. By the way, what was your nephew doing while you and Mrs. Hayes were chasing the canary?
Bobby? Why, Bobby was seated at the table.
Alone, and unobserved.
No, I mean, yes, he was, but...
Miss Brink, please.
That is horrid, Ellery.
Facts very often are, Nicky.
Dr. Milton, take me home.
Miss Brink, you can't let this drop.
I won't have another word said about the entire matter, understand?
You may have no choice, Miss Brink. This is attempted murder.
It's not. Anyway, if you interfere, Mr. Queen, I'll deny everything. Yes, and you needn't try to send me a bill. I won't pay it.
Well, Mr. Queen, I didn't realize who was involved. I mean, I think you ought to know, though, that she's concealing her real financial status. She owns half a dozen buildings in Greenwich Village, and she's one of the wealthiest women in the neighborhood.
I'm sure of that, Dr. Melton.
Well, I'd better get her back home. She's still pretty weak, you know, and at her age, it was a narrow escape. I'm sorry.
It's all right, Doctor.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Ellery, isn't there something you can do?
If she denies the story and refuses to press charges, Nicky, I'm afraid not.
But I just can't believe it. It's frightening. An 8-year-old boy, Ellery.
Yes. Apparently, the boy released the canary deliberately to lure his mother and aunt away from the table so that he could poison his aunt's stew unobserved.
I don't care how much of an old witch Sarah Brink is. To do a thing like that, a boy of 8. He must be a fiend, Ellery.
Psychopathic case.
Well, something ought to be done about it. The woman's in danger.
That's quite true, Nicky. Unsuccessful poisoners usually repeat. Nicky, what kind of stew did Sarah Brink say she cooked that night?
Kind of stew?
Yes.
I don't know, Ellery. I don't think she said.
Oh, careless of me. I should have asked her. Well, about all we can do, Nicky, is to try to interest some social service agency and hope for the best. Hand me the phone, will you?
But it wasn't to be. Everything was closed for the New Year's weekend. And then it was just yesterday afternoon. Ellery Queen's residence?
Naturally. Hello, Nicky.
Oh, Inspector Queen.
Nicky, put Ellery on.
Right. Ellery?
Yes?
Your father.
Oh. Yes, Dad.
Son, you'd never forgive me if I didn't let you in on this.
In on what, Dad?
Cockeyedest case I ever saw. Can you get down here in 15 minutes? I'll try and hold him.
Hold him? Hold whom?
Witnesses to the crime. About 3 dozen of them.
3 dozen what?
Fact. If you don't hurry, there'll probably be 300 of them.
Dad, I don't see what... 36
Washington Square North. Make it snappy, Ellery.
36B Washington Square North.
What are you mumbling about, Ellery? What did the inspector want?
Nicky. Nicky, that's the address of Dr. Milton's poison case.
Sarah Brink?
Yes. And Dad says there's been another crime. Come on.
Three dozen witnesses. And Inspector Queen, usually the coolest cop between the Battery and the Bronx, is in a state of considerable excitement. We'll meet the witnesses and Queen the Elder in Act Two, along with Sergeant Veely and a quorum of suspects. In the meantime, and in the intermission, we'll meet with Kenneth Banghart, who speaks for the Ford Motor Company. Ken?
Among the hardest working and most respected people in our nation are the country doctors. The men and women who bring healing knowledge and skill to even the most remote farms and homes. Day after day, in all kinds of weather, they make their rounds through forests and mountains and deserts, going wherever they're needed. And because their work is so important and their travel is frequently difficult, the Ford Motor Company is proud that so many doctors prefer to drive Ford cars. One of these is Dr. H.F. Lawson of Crossville, Tennessee. The people who live and work in the hills around Crossville know Dr. Lawson very well. Summer or winter, dust or snow or mud, over the roughest roads and steepest hills, Dr. Lawson gets there when he's needed. Recently, Dr. Lawson wrote to the Ford Motor Company to say why he preferred to drive a Ford. He said that he can always start his Ford in any kind of weather, that it rides comfortably, that his Ford always takes him where he wants to go, no matter how bad the driving conditions. My Ford has never failed to come through, he wrote. As a rural doctor, I am qualified to say that no other car can beat a Ford for all-round performance under all conditions. That's the kind of service and dependability that millions of Americans have learned to expect from Ford products. That's the kind of performance you can expect from any product made by Ford. Act two of The Adventure of the Bad Boy will be presented after a brief pause for station identification.
Theater, The Adventure of the Bad Boy, Act Two. Our intermission turned out to be just long enough for Ellery Queen and Nicky to hail a cab, hop into same, and head for 36B Washington Square North, the scene of the crime. We pick them up as they swing around the lower Fifth Avenue corner of Washington Square.
Hop it, Nicky. Come on.
Gentlemen, wait for ladies.
Excuse me, please. Mind letting us through?
Oh, you might carry me.
Pardon me. Officer.
Huh? Hello, Mr. Green. Here, one side, you people. Stand back there. Stand back. Here.
You still with me, Nicky?
It's not your fault if I am. Ellery, you don't think there's been another...
I'm trying not to.
Come in, my sir. Come in.
Oh, Billy, it's about time.
Well, y'all set for a little surprise?
What's happened here, Sergeant Veely?
Right this way, folks. Inspector's waiting for you.
Veely, what's all the mystery about?
I got my orders, Meister, you'll say.
A surprise, you said, Sergeant?
I'll say it's a surprise. One more flight.
Huh, the drink apartment.
That is correct. Hey, you know the old dame, Meister?
Ed Henry, Veely?
Yes, sir.
Dad.
Hello, Nicky.
Hello, Inspector.
Wait till you see this, son. You won't believe it.
Try me.
Inspector?
This way, please. This is the upper hall, Ellery. Doors off here all lead to various rooms of the apartment. It occupies the whole floor. Here we are. You men ready?
Yeah.
Really? Flint?
Yes, sir.
Take it, Hagstrom.
Yes, sir. We do a repeat, huh?
Oh, look, Inspector Queen, we don't have to go through all that again.
You'd think once a day enough, Flint.
Yeah. I'm not mad. They are, all of them. Dad, will you please...
It's a joke, isn't it, Inspector?
Some joke. All right, boys. Take your positions just outside the door.
I think it's coming.
Ellery, this is exactly what we found when we got here and opened this door.
Yes?
Open it, Veely.
I remember, fellas, this is all for dear old NYU. 2-14-89.
There's one getting away. That one, yep. Nine.
Come here, you little devil.
Rabbits.
Yes, rabbits. Herds of them. Spent half an hour chasing through the house trying to recapture that dad blasted bunnies. They all came out of this bedroom, Ellery.
Whose room is it, Dad?
A woman named Sarah Brink. Owner of this house.
Sarah Brink.
No, Nicky. Stay in the hall.
Yep, son. That's just what we found when the rabbit scooted past us.
What?
Sarah Brink, Nicky. Dead.
See?
And the appearance of these bedclothes, Doc, looks like there was a struggle.
Sure there was a struggle, Inspector, with old man Death. Yeah, you'd struggle too if you died of what she did. Now, let's see.
Well, what was it, you cadaver mechanic?
Nah, Dick, your blood pressure.
Say, this is a fine time for a fiddle to be scratching.
Yeah, who's that?
Some fiddle teacher that lives downstairs named Weber.
Well, Prouty?
Oh, it's no use, Inspector.
The family lunched on rabbit stew today,
Yes, and right after lunch, the old girl came in here to lie down for a nap.
Had some vittles in her stomach, I'll bet, before she ate that stew. Otherwise, she'd have passed out at table. Well, gentlemen, it's arsenical poisoning.
Ah. Wow, if it ain't the maestro.
I was beginning to think we weren't speaking, Ellery. Yes, sir. Arsenical poisoning.
You're positive, Dr. Prouty?
Sunken features, cyanosed skin, irritation of eyelids, and skin eruption.
There can't possibly be a mistake.
Doubt, my boy, is the deity of science. But in this case, I'd stake my professional reputation it was arsenious oxide.
White arsenic.
Better do an autopsy right away, Prouty. Make sure.
Naturally. Runch's test will do the trick. She'd have been luckier if she'd been born a rabbit. Arsenic won't kill them. They're immune.
Okay, call the wagon.
On the way, Doc.
And here's your removal order.
What's this?
What's what, son?
This top hat on Sarah Brink's night table, Dad.
Oh, you spotted it, Ellery.
What was she, a male impersonator?
Interesting, huh, maestro?
Well, I'll be. Observe, I have nothing up my sleeve. I insert my right hand in the hat. Hocus pocus, open sesame, till Eulenspiegel, presto, a rabbit.
Very interesting. So what?
Merely one bunny too scared to run away when you boys opened the door, Sergeant. Took refuge in this soap topper. Top hat and rabbits. The murder must have been committed by a magician.
What'd I tell you, Vili?
Maestro, you throw me.
Walk over that buck.
Here, Inspector.
Did I tell you you'd say that, Billy?
I bet you framed
it. Oh, but, Dad, I wasn't serious.
Well, I am. She was poisoned by a magician, all right. I've got him in the living room right now, under arrest.
You mean there's actually a magician mixed up in this? Oh, of course. The actor.
Uh-huh. Lives downstairs across the hall from Weber, the violin teacher.
The vaudeville magician, maestro. Calls himself Gordini the Great.
I want to see him.
Flint.
Yeah, Inspector?
Gordini been acting up?
Nah, gentle as a rabbit.
I don't mean to tell you how to run your business, Inspector, but believe me, I didn't poison Sarah Brink.
I know, Gordini. You're just a victim of a plot. This is my son, Ellery. He wants to talk to you.
Mr. Gordini, I'm very much interested in Sarah Brink's death. I'm told you were home today in your apartment around noon when she was poisoned.
That's right, Mr. Queen. I'm temporarily at liberty.
You could have used your time to better advantage, man.
Just a moment, Sergeant. I'm told, too, Mr. Gordini, that the fire escape makes it possible for you to have been just outside Sarah Brink's kitchen window while the two plates of rabbit stew, which Miss Brink and her sister Mrs. Hayes ate for lunch today, stood on the serving cabinet near the kitchen window.
Yes, Mr. Queen, but the kitchen window has an iron grill which can only be opened from inside. All the windows at the back of this house have. How am I supposed to have got past those bars?
With this thingamajig, Gordini.
Where'd you get my lazy tongs?
Is that a lazy tongs? And what are they, Inspector?
It's like a pair of scissors, Vitti. Opens and shoots out in crisscrossing slats. Like this.
Hussar, you missed my schnoz by half an inch.
Well, I missed, didn't I?
Be careful.
You got the idea, Henry?
Yes.
This is part of Gordini's magic equipment. Comes from his stuff downstairs. Gordini, you stood on the fire escape outside the Brink kitchen window and dropped arsenic into Sarah's plate of stew from the end of these tongs through the grill.
What can I do but deny it? It's not true.
And the top hat. It has pockets inside, Gordini. A regular magician's hat. You admit it's yours?
Of course it's mine.
If you're innocent, how did it get into the Brink woman's bedroom?
I don't know.
Dad,
Hold it, son. Gordini, I've had you checked this afternoon. Your real handle's Gordon, Algernon Gordon. And you were a chemist before you became a stage magician. Then you'd know all about arsenic, wouldn't you, Mr. Gordon Gordini?
I see I'm to be convicted on coincidence.
No coincidence that you've been quarreling with the murdered woman, Gordini. The whole neighborhood knows about it.
Quarreling about what?
Well, it seems the old lady told him to keep away from her sister Frances and the kid Bobby.
Oh, well, that's pretty circumstantial, Dad.
Is it? And bat this around, Ellery. I've got a witness who lives in a McDougal Alley house opposite the back windows here. My witness says she saw Gordini standing on the fire escape outside Sarah Brink's kitchen window at just about the time that rabbit stew must have been poisoned.
Is that true, Gordini?
Yes, Mr. Queen. I was there, but I was, well, snoofing.
Why?
I'd rather not say.
Pretty lame, Gordini. That's the best you can do.
Dad, there's one fact you've overlooked that punches a pretty big hole in your Gordini theory.
What's that, son?
Frances Hayes had stew for lunch today, too, didn't she?
Yes.
She wasn't poisoned, was she?
No.
But both plates of stew, you say, the one which Sarah ate and the one which Frances ate, were on a serving cabinet near the kitchen window, accessible to Gordini on the fire escape through the lazy tongs. How could Gordini have known which plate was Sarah's?
Yes, how could I have known?
Maestro's got something there, Inspector.
Yes.
As for Gordini's top hat being in Sarah's bedroom, Bobby Hayes told me he brought it there this morning.
Yes, yes, I'd forgotten that. That's quite possible. Bobby often plays with my paraphernalia.
Furthermore, the rabbits aren't Gordini's. They were Sarah Brink's. She sometimes fed them in her room. I think that pretty well explodes the circumstantial case against Gordini.
Thank you, Mr. Queen.
But I'm not through with you, Gordini.
What's that?
You're obviously concealing something. What is it?
I don't know what you mean.
Gordini, I think you know who poisoned Sarah Brink. Do you? You do, don't you?
No talkie.
See if you can make Gordini change his mind, Dad.
Where are you going?
Oh, to snoop around.
Something horrible would happen in this house. I knew it. I knew it.
Oh, Mommy. Mommy.
Please, Mrs. Hayes, you've got to control yourself.
Yes.
Son, it's all right. Don't be frightened, baby. Aunt Sarah's just gone away, Bobby.
Oh, she's dead, Mom.
Bobby. Who's that?
It's probably an officer. Come in.
Oh, Nicky.
Ellery. Well?
Glad you're with Mrs. Hayes, Nicky. Hi, Bobby.
Hi.
Miss Porter's been a great help, Mr. Queen.
You are a real detective?
Well, sometimes I wonder, Bobby. Mrs. Hayes, all the pets in this house, canary, cat, goldfish, they were your sister Sarah's, weren't they?
And the rabbits, too, Mr. Queen.
Oh, yes, the rabbits. I assume she didn't quarter them in her bedroom permanently. Where did she usually keep them, Mrs. Hayes?
In the backyard.
In a real rabbit hutch.
That so, Bobby?
Yeah.
Sarah.
Mrs. Hayes, who fed them?
Sarah wouldn't let anyone else take care of... You remembered something, Mrs. Hayes? Yes. Sarah had an argument last week with Mr. Weber. She caught him feeding her rabbits in the yard.
Boy, did she tell him off.
Weber. Must be Weber playing the violin now. Excuse me. Sergeant.
Yeah, Maestro?
Have Weber brought up, will you?
Now, that's constructive. Anything to stop that fiddle.
Oh, Mrs. Hayes, you had rabbit stew rather often, didn't you?
At least once a week. Sarah was very fond of it. She killed her own rabbits. They were multiplying so rapidly.
I don't like rabbit stew. Yeah, and Mom doesn't either. She only ate it because Aunt Sarah made her.
Bobby.
Just after your sister brought the plates of stew into the dining room for lunch today, Mrs. Hayes, did anything unusual happen?
Unusual? Well, I don't think I...
Well, like the escape of the canary last week.
Well, you mustn't think Bobby's a bad boy, Mr. Queen. He's just mischievous, like most boys of his age, and he didn't need to do anything...
Then something did happen at lunch today.
Ah, you can tell him, Mom. I pushed over the fishbowl.
Oh, Ellery.
Sorry, Nicky. And while your mother and aunt were rescuing the goldfish, Bobby, what were you doing?
Sitting at the table. Aunt Sarah was yelling at me. She said, just for that, I couldn't have chocolate cream pie. I'm glad she's dead, old yeller.
Bobby, you mustn't talk that way about...
Here, come on.
Well, Inspector, Sergeant.
Dr. Melton and Herr Weber.
What's this now, Henry?
Oh, we've just been chewing the fat in here, Dad. Mr. Weber, you're the violinist we've been hearing all afternoon?
Yeah.
Mrs. Hayes, I'm terribly sorry about your Schwester, Miss Brink. I hear what happens.
If you're sorry, why have you been playing your violin? And my sister lying dead up here.
Ah, but this is doch, how do you say, sad music, Mrs. Hayes. I have sad feelings. I play sad music. What I am from where I come, it is all sad. Everything. Everyone. Even here, I cannot forget.
Mr. Weber, I understand you fed Sarah Brink's rabbits last week.
Yeah, yeah, mid letters.
Hmm. And she was very angry with you.
And so?
I sit in the backyard, thinking of Köln, Stuttgart, Zwickau. I play my violin. I lay it on the bench, I feed the bunnies. Miss Brink, she comes out, she takes my violin, she breaks it in little pieces. She is like a crazy woman. That is my good violin. The other, the one I play now on, that is not so good.
Sarah had a vile temper. I'm sorry, Mr. Weber. I didn't know about that.
Natürlich. I want she shall pay for my instrument. I am poor. But she says no. I should move. Also, I move. Tomorrow. Herr Dr. Melton, he is moving also.
Oh, really?
That right, Dr. Melton?
Yes, as soon as I can find new quarters in this neighborhood.
Why are you moving, Doctor?
Well, my patients are all pretty poor, Mr. Queen. They don't pay very well. I've been behind in my rent. The other day, Miss Brink said she wouldn't wait any longer, that, well, I'd have to get out.
But Dr. Melton, I didn't know that either.
I know, Mrs. Hayes.
I suppose I own this house now. Well, you don't have to move. You've been here so long, Doctor.
Why, that's very decent of you, Mrs. Hayes.
And you too, Mr. Weber. You stay on. And as soon as I can, I'll pay for your broken violin.
Danke schön. Danke schön, gnädige Frau.
Blast it.
What, Dan?
Ah, this racket is one part luck and 99 parts waiting. Reports, reports. Where are they?
Why, Inspector, you ought to be ashamed of yourself, kicking that cat. Here, puss, don't let the nasty old man hurt your feelings.
Cats, goldfish, canaries, rabbits, regular zoo. Don't look at me that way, Nicky. I didn't kick the confounded beast. I didn't know he was there.
There, he's apologized, puss. He's a nice, nasty old man.
Harry, what's the answer to this blasted riddle? If Gordini didn't poison the stew...
I've got a notion, Dad. Just the vaguest notion.
Oh, the great man has a notion. Imagine that, Puss. Suppose it'll ever grow up to be a great big idea.
Hey, who swiped my gun?
What, Dini?
My gun, Inspector. My rod. Somebody left it right out of my holster. Was it one of you? Come on. Was it?
Why, Sergeant, I'm ashamed of you.
You better find it, Bailey, before it turns up on the scene of a crime.
That wasn't one of you?
No.
I'll never hear the end of this.
That's the funniest thing. Where's my handkerchief? That's funny. I'm sure it was in my bag.
Your handkerchief missing, Nicky?
No, Ellery, my compact. Why, it isn't here.
What's this now? You better take a look at yourself, son.
Oh. My fountain pen. It's gone.
Hey! My snuff box!
What?
Inspector.
Oh, Flint, what is it?
Well, Doc Prouty just phoned from the morgue. He said something about submucous hemorrhages showing up in the PM or something. Anyway, the old dame died of arsenic poisoning, he says.
Well, that's progress. Flint, where knew that?
Oh. Well, there's a report from the city toxicologist, too. You know that white stuff looked like flour we scraped up from the floor of the rabbit hutch?
Dad, you found a white powder in the backyard rabbit hutch?
Sure, son, before you got here. So what, Flint?
Well, the toxicologist says that's arsenic, too.
Arsenic in the rabbit hutch? Why didn't someone tell me?
Hey, Inspector!
Huh? Oh, it's you again.
Hey, I found my gun.
You did, Sergeant?
Where?
On the downstairs hall table. My gun and your snuff box, by the way.
Oh, give me that. Thanks.
You didn't find a compact by any chance, Sergeant.
I sure did. Is this yours, Miss Porter?
Well, thank you.
And don't tell me, Maestro, this fountain pen is yours.
Yes, yes, Sergeant. Thanks. They were all on the downstairs hall table, huh?
Something awful funny around here.
Someone swiped something from each one of us.
Thieves are in plain sight to be found.
Thief who returns his loot.
But if he didn't want the stuff, why in time did he steal it in the first place?
That's it.
What is that?
Huh? What, Ellery?
The key to the whole case.
Ellery, you mean the one who stole...
Yes, Nicky. The key to the whole case.
The key to the whole case. Somewhere around this point, I believe, it used to be novelist Queen's practice to challenge the reader to name the culprit with all the pertinent facts at his disposal. My guess always goes wrong. And in this case, I suspect so is yours. Act three will, shall we say, let the cat out of the bag, or the rabbit out of the hat. And so you might just as well give up, stop guessing, and relax, and listen to Kenneth Banghart for the Ford Motor Company.
During the past 44 years, the experience of millions of people has proven countless times that Ford products are outstanding for their reliability, economy, and service. Three generations have recognized the name Ford as an American symbol of quality and dependability. And now there is another definite scientific proof of Ford quality on a large scale. A recent study conducted by independent life insurance experts determined the life expectancy of the five largest selling makes of trucks. The experts tabulated and studied the histories of almost 5 million trucks and established the average life expectancy of each make. That study proved that Ford trucks last 10% longer than the average truck. It proved that Ford trucks last up to 19 6/10% longer than their four principal competitors. This scientific study is conclusive proof of what Ford truck owners have known for a long time, that Ford trucks last longer. It's an unusually important tribute to the quality of Ford products. But even this outstanding record is not good enough. True to the Ford tradition, Ford trucks are constantly being improved. Soon there will be new model Ford trucks with new power, versatility, and beauty. They will be built on a basic principle of engineering which assures even longer life for Ford trucks. And you will be served better because the organization that has built more trucks than any other, Ford, builds trucks stronger to last longer. You can depend on Ford.
As the previous act ended, you will recall, Ellery Queen had just discovered the key to the whole case. To which, as our curtain rises once more, Nicky makes reply.
You know, Ellery, you're the most exasperating man alive. You mislead people. Me, for instance.
What, Nicky?
Oh, I know you're not listening. You never do. You make people think things, then it turns out to be something entirely different. The inspector can't help himself. After all, he's your father. But someday
What's this?
What?
This, Nicky.
Oh. Why do I always fall for it? An old closet. Key to the whole case. What key? No answer. The great man wraps himself in mystery. Hush, hush. Top secret. Ellery, will you come out of that closet and listen?
You come into this closet and listen.
Huh?
Hear it, Nicky?
It sounds hollow. Something funny about that wall. This is Bobby's bedroom.
Look.
A sliding panel. Sort of medieval, isn't it, Ellery?
No, Nicky. Simply 8-year-old boy. Bobby's sawn through the back wall of his closet. Let's see what's behind this panel.
Secret passages yet.
Here, give me that flash, Nicky.
Flight of wooden stairs going
up. Let's see where it goes.
Ellery, you wretch, you've got the flash.
Here, Nicky. Watch your step.
Ellery, doesn't that violin of Weber sound louder?
Uh-huh. This passage apparently acts as an amplifier. I wonder where it leads.
A door. It's just an old attic.
Uh-huh.
Oh, Bobby couldn't have built these stairs.
Hardly. It's an old house, Nicky. Part of the original. The stairs were probably boarded up during some renovation, and Bobby's rediscovered them.
What's that?
Ellery, if you leave me here in the dark, I...
Come here, Nicky. Look at this sign.
Sign?
Robert Hayes, magician. Bobby's handiwork. Ah, what's this box?
An awful mess in there.
Yes. Cards, handcuffs, trick coins, wand, handkerchiefs, ropes. Huh. Collapsible knife. The usual magician's truck. Ah.
Oh, don't try to impress me. What's in that packet? Magic hoofties?
I'm afraid, Nicky, it's a more deadly magic than that.
A more deadly...
A white powder, Nicky.
White powder?
Arsenic.
I can't believe it. I just can't. It's too revolting, Ellery.
I wonder why Gordini didn't tell the truth. He knew all the time. Unless...
Ellery, a boy. A boy of 8.
Well, let's go downstairs, Nicky, and get it over with.
Billy, how can you know? I've seen everything you have. I've got all the facts. They don't add up to a thing.
Bad mathematics, Dad.
Unless this kid, this Bobby Hayes...
The cat... Oh, nuts. I'm in the wrong racket.
Ellery, please do it quickly. His poor mother is so upset now.
All right, let's go. We'll all be bawling in a minute. Quiet, please. Go ahead, Ellery.
Just a moment, please. Bobby, dear.
Hey, Mom, what are they going to do now? Why is everybody so quiet?
Bobby, I want you to do something for Mother. I want you to go to my bedroom and stay there.
Oh, Mom, I want to see. I never saw a real detective get his man. I want to stay.
Bobby, please go.
Mrs. Hayes.
What?
Mrs. Hayes, I'd prefer Bobby to remain here.
Remain here?
Queen, why don't you let the boy go? This is no place for a child 8 years old.
And suppose you tell us, Mr. Gordini, who poisoned Sarah Brink. Tell us, and I'll send Bobby away.
No!
I don't want to go away.
Why won't you tell us, Mr. Gordini?
Because I've got no proof. You wouldn't believe me.
I see. Gordini, when you were on the fire escape... Bobby, you and Mr. Gordini are great pals, I take it.
Bobby, be quiet.
Aw, Mom. Sure, Mr. Queen, we're just like that.
And Bobby's at the age, Gordini, when he's most susceptible to the fascinations of secret passages, sliding panels, and magic. Right, Gordini? You've been teaching Bobby magic, haven't you?
You ought to see all the tricks Mr. Gordini showed me.
Bobby, don't say anything.
And when Mr. Gordini showed you all these marvelous magic tricks, Bobby, just what did he tell you?
That I had to practice all the time. Practicing is the way you get to be a great magician.
And Sergeant Feely's revolver, Bobby. My fountain pen. Inspector Queen's snuff box. And, Miss Porter's compact. When you took them from us under our noses, Bobby... You were simply practicing, weren't you?
Bobby stole things. Oh, Mr. Queen, he couldn't. He's only a boy. He didn't know what he was doing.
I did, too, Mom. Only I wasn't stealing them. I left them right in the downstairs hall table, didn't I?
That's how I knew it was you, Bobby.
I just wanted to see if I could, Mr. Queen. That's not stealing.
Bobby.
Mommy, I didn't steal.
Ellery, get it over with, will you?
And, Bobby, you took that packet of white powder, too, didn't you?
White powder?
And hid it in your attic hideout. Hmm?
I...
Bobby, don't answer.
Let the boy answer, Mrs. Hayes, please. Bobby?
Mr. Gordini told me to look for packages of white powder, like flour, he said, to take them and give them to him as soon as the coast was clear. But that one in the attic, I didn't get the chance, Mr. Gordini. I was going to give it to you,
Bobby,
but...
don't say any more. Why not, Gordini? What is this, Ellery?
Bobby, what else did Mr. Gordini tell you to do?
Nothing. He didn't tell me nothing.
Bobby... Bobby, you can tell me, because I know.
You do? Yeah, sure, you're a detective. Detectives know everything. But I promise not to tell.
Well, then suppose I tell you, Bobby, and then it won't be breaking a promise, will it?
No.
Mr. Gordini told you there was something you had to do to save your mother's life. Isn't that right?
Gee, how'd you know that?
To save my life, Mr. Queen.
And Bobby...
My life?
You had to do that thing every time there was rabbit stew for lunch or supper, didn't you?
Yes, sir. It was something fierce. I had to watch all the time. I had to save my mother's life. I don't know why, but that's what Mr. Gordini told me.
No, Bobby, no.
And when you couldn't do this certain thing that Mr. Gordini had told you to do, Bobby, when you couldn't do it without your mother and aunt seeing you, you were a very smart boy. You decided to distract their attention.
The way magicians do when you don't want them to see their trick.
That's right, sir. Bobby, that's right. So last week you purposely let the canary escape. This afternoon you purposely upset the fishbowl.
But why, son? For the love of Pete, why?
A diversion, Dad, can only have one purpose, to mask an act. When his mother and aunt were chasing that canary last week, while they were saving the goldfish today, Bobby took the two plates of rabbit stew, his mother's and his aunt's, and switched them.
Oh, yeah, that's why.
That's what you told Bobby to do every time they had rabbit stew, Gordini, to switch the two women's plates. Because you knew, Gordini, you knew the secret of those rabbits.
What secret, Harry?
What are you talking about, Maestro?
Bobby, will you leave the room now, please?
Yes, sir.
I don't understand either, Ellery.
Dr. Prouty said today that rabbits are immune to arsenic. So if you fed rabbits lettuce or carrots, which had been dosed with the poison, it wouldn't hurt them a bit. But their flesh would become permeated with it. Then, if you made a rabbit stew, you'd be arsenically poisoned. Dad, you found arsenic in the rabbit hutch. That proved the animals were being fed the poison while they were still alive. Then they were slaughtered and cooked into a stew. And yet, only one portion of the stew was poisoned. How is that possible? Who could have controlled the preparation of the stew so rigidly that one portion was cooked with poisoned rabbit and the other with unpoisoned rabbit? Only one person. The person who wouldn't let anyone else feed the rabbits. The person who wouldn't let anyone else prepare food in her kitchen. The cook herself.
Sarah. My sister Sarah.
Yes, Mrs. Hayes, your sister Sarah. She obviously wasn't trying to poison herself or Bobby, who always refused rabbit stew. She could only have been trying to poison you.
Oh, Sarah.
Gordini, you used to be a chemist. You saw Sarah Brink sprinkle a white powder on the rabbit's food in the hutch one day. You scraped some of it up, analyzed it, saw the whole thing in a flash. And to save Mrs. Hayes' life, you got Bobby to switch plates every time the sisters had rabbit stew. And Bobby did so, never realizing the significance of his act. And so you got Sarah Brink to poison herself.
But why, Mr. Queen? Why did my sister want to kill me? I have nothing.
Oh, you underestimate your wealth, Mrs. Hayes. You have a boy, a son, and all your sister's possessions couldn't buy her that.
She wanted Bobby.
Yes, Nikki. She wanted Bobby.
I'm sure that all of you are as happy as I am to learn that Bobby was not the culprit. The first time I heard the play in rehearsal, my money went down on the doctor. But as I said, I'm always wrong about these things. Our performance engaged the talents of three members of the original cast of the Ellery Queen series. Hugh Marlowe, prominent star of the Broadway stage and motion pictures, who created the role of Ellery Queen. Santos Ortega as Inspector Richard Queen, and Ted DeCorsia once more in the part of Sergeant Veeley. Nikki was played by Charlotte Keene. Next week, Storm in a Teacup. As a motion picture, Storm in a Teacup was one of those all-too-rare events, a comedy of solid warmth and character, a photoplay about real people. If you join us next week, you will find, I think, that the story has lost none of its warm humor in translation to radio for the first time. Next Sunday, then, you have an appointment to meet Mrs. Honoria Hegarty, her dog Patsy, and the people they stirred into a storm in a teacup.
The Adventure of the Bad Boy was written by Ellery Queen. The continuity was by George Faulkner. The original music was composed and conducted by Lynn Murray. Our editor is Howard Teichman, and the entire production was under the direction of George Zachary. The other players heard in today's broadcast were Brad Barker, Harold Durenforth, Sarah Fussell, John Gibson, Averill Harris, Jane Houston, Ann Seymour, Walter Vaughn, and Guy Wallace. The Ford Theater is presented by the Ford Motor Company, makers of Ford, Mercury, and Lincoln cars, and Ford trucks, tractors, and motor coaches. Thank you.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Standard of California, on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and Standard stations throughout the West, invites you to Let George Do It. The Ghost on Bliss Terrace, another adventure of George Valentine.
Personal notice, danger is my stock and feed. If you're crowded into a corner and you can't fight your way out alone, you've got a job for me, George Valentine. Rifle details.
Dear Mr. Valentine, there's no such thing as a haunted house. You know that, and I know it. Still, a great many people in our neighborhood are convinced that a certain empty house on Bliss Terrace is occupied by a ghost. I've persuaded a group of my saner neighbors to join me in raising a fee so we can prove once and for all
that it's all so much poppycock. You can find me at home any morning. It's signed Mrs. Angela McCauley.
A haunted house, no less.
Well, I know how we can earn that fee in a hurry.
All right, Angel, I'll play straight, man. How?
Just put out a for rent sign. Whatever ghosts happen to be around will be trampled to death.
Brooksy, you take this too lightly.
Hmm?
Yeah, this isn't just one person's fanciful whim. This is a community project headed by a solid citizen named Angela McCauley.
Hmm.
We can't turn our backs on a civic enterprise like this.
Oh, all right. But what standard equipment for a job like this? Hand-tailored bed sheets, old props from an Abbott and Costello picture?
No, Angel. Just pride in our work and a normal amount of curiosity.
And as I've said, Mr. Valentine, although we're ordinary middle-class families, we take great pride in our neighborhood.
Yes, you've told us that, Mrs. McCauley.
You can't imagine the effect all this talk about the Mitchell house has had.
What do you mean?
Oh, it just stands there empty. Nobody will rent it. Nobody will buy it. An eyesore for the whole neighborhood.
Well, outside of saying boo to the ghosts, what do you expect me to do?
It's entirely up to you, Mr. Valentine. We just want you to prove that all those stories about the Mitchell house are false.
Well, just what are these stories, Mrs. McCauley?
Well, there was the milkman, Fred Horton. He swears that when he was delivering milk one morning, he saw a curtain swing back and a face suddenly appear in the window.
I see.
Well, is that all that happened?
Well, Tommy Koenig, that's Martha Koenig's little boy, he says he saw a face in the window, too.
Well, anyway, that's two people that saw it.
Hmm. I certainly wouldn't take Fred Horton's word for anything. And Tommy, that boy can dream up anything with his imagination.
I doubt very much if a group of substantial people like yourself would have asked me in at all just because a milkman made a few wayward remarks and a little boy seconded the motion. Are you sure you're not leaving anything out, Mrs. McCauley?
Not a thing. As I told all the others, this never would have happened if Sam Mitchell hadn't been murdered.
Murdered?
Oh, well, this might be the thing you left out. Did you say Sam Mitchell was murdered?
Yes, that's right. About a month ago. It was never solved.
Why didn't you say that at the beginning?
What a way to tell a story. An unsolved murder is an afterthought.
And just because Sam Mitchell was hit over the head by some passing tramp, it doesn't mean the whole neighborhood should be given a bad name.
Yeah, I know, and I see.
Young man, do you or don't you want to accept this assignment?
Oh, yes, Mrs. McCauley. Yes, I'd like to take it on.
Good.
I don't know why. Maybe, as Miss Brooks said, it's just the fascinating way you tell a story. With murder as an afterthought.
Okay, Valentine, okay. I don't see why this Mitchell case has to be a private nightmare.
Oh?
Nightmare?
Well, what would you call it, Miss Brooks? Sam Mitchell, railroad engineer, devoted husband, coming up for pension after 40 years of faithful service. Hasn't got an enemy in the world. Suddenly we find him beaten to death in the home he worked and paid for.
Yeah, we found out that much, Lieutenant.
There wasn't anything stolen. Everybody loved the guy. We can't find the murder weapon.
How about Mrs. Mitchell, Lieutenant?
Oh, well, she was visiting her sister when her husband was murdered. He was hit over the head repeatedly with a blunt instrument by someone who apparently couldn't do the job right the first time.
Just a minute, Riley.
Huh? Yeah?
I told you my only job is to prove that the house on Bliss Terrace isn't haunted.
I know, I know. Ghosts. That dame Mrs. McCauley's been in my hair, too.
Well, what about it, Lieutenant?
We've been through that house with a fine-tooth comb. We've watched it from the outside. Nobody could have got in or out without us seeing them. Oh, you know how people are when they start talking. Ghosts. Of all the cockeyed jobs you've ever taken on, Valentine,
take
this
it
is
easy,
the...
easy, Lieutenant. Take it easy.
God.
Suppose I look for ghosts, and you try to find the murderer. I understand you deliver milk in the neighborhood of Bliss Terrace, Mr. Horton.
That's right, mister.
Well, now, just exactly what did you see?
Well, like I've been saying, a face in the window around dawn one morning.
A man or a woman?
Oh, couldn't tell. It was a thin face, like it was almost all bone. Long, stringy hair. Just seen it for a minute. Look, you believe me, sir?
Oh, sure. Go on.
Well, not only that. One morning, I heard music coming out of the Mitchell house.
What's that?
Yeah, a guitar or a banjo or something. It went something like this. Da, 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 da. You believe me, don't you?
Oh, yeah, every word. I was just marveling at the way you carry a tune. Thanks for the information, friend.
Sure, I seen somebody in the Mitchell house, and I'm going to prove it, too.
Okay, Tommy, take it easy.
Well, tell us about it, dear. What kind of person was it?
Well, lady, it was getting dark. I put my face up to the window on the porch, and gosh, all of a sudden, there was another face, looking right at me.
I bet that must have thrown a scare into you, Tommy.
Me scared? Not me, lady. I just kept looking right back at him. I'd say it was me who scared the daylights out of him.
So it was a man, huh?
Golly, I don't know for sure. He had long hair like a lady, but... Well, anyway, it was real, like Mr. Horton said. Just wait till I prove it, too.
Well, that's a job we've both got, son. Only it looks as though you've got a head start on me. I know it can't be easy for you to talk about this, Mrs. Mitchell, but...
I don't mind at all. Really, I don't.
Oh, that's very nice of you.
Tell me, dear, do you like this perfume? It's lilac.
Oh, it's lovely,
yes. Do you think I have too much on? Always used lilac since I was a girl. As Sam used to say, made me seem even smaller and more fragile than I am.
Yes. Now, about the house, Mrs. Mitchell, you were saying...
After Sam was... Well... After he passed away, I tried to go back, but I couldn't stay there. You see, there's someone there. I felt it. Footsteps in the night. And once I heard...
Music?
Yes. How did you ever guess, Mr. Valentine?
Oh, I'm psychic on my mother's side.
That's nice. It was an old, old song. It reminded me of the days before Sam and I were married and moved into that house on Bliss Terrace. You know, I was quite a belle, Mr. Valentine.
Yes, well, that's easy to imagine,
dances,
but if...
the mandolin club every Sunday, canoe rides. Oh, those were happy days. I could have married someone more romantic than Sam, like... Paul Huff.
Oh, look, Mrs. Mitchell, I understand you were away at the time of your husband's death.
Yes. I was staying here at my sister's. I'm afraid that Sam and I had a little tiff.
Oh, about what? If you care to tell me.
Sam was getting his pension in a few days. He wanted to live quietly on Bliss Terrace, but I wanted to use the money to see all the wonderful places I've only read about. Poor Sam. Now, I suppose I'll have to do that alone.
Yeah. Mrs. Mitchell, I wonder if you'd let me have the key to your haunted house. I'd like to take a look around.
know, George, we could sit here in the car and watch that house all night and still not see anything happen.
Yeah, you're so right, Angel. I don't even know what I expect to see happen.
Darling?
Huh?
Well, when we went through the house before, I did get sort of a funny feeling.
Not you too, Brooksy. That's Mrs. Mitchell's private routine.
Oh, well, I kept getting the feeling that I was in a honeymoon cottage that hadn't been changed in 40 years.
Oh, how do you like that? A honeymoon cottage, bliss terrace, and a murder. What a combination.
Oh, George.
Huh?
Maybe I'm imagining things, but isn't the curtain in that window on the porch moving?
Yeah. Come on, Brooksy, that's our cue. See, somebody was moving the curtain in this room. There are no windows open. It couldn't have moved itself.
Well, nobody seems to be here now.
Yeah, well, we're going to keep right on looking. Come on, we'll start with the dining room.
Okay. The light should be here on the wall somewhere.
No, you don't.
Huh?
Stay where you are.
Huh?
George.
Okay, you ask for it.
All right, Tommy. You can put away your machine gun now.
Huh? Oh, it's only you guys.
Say, how did you get in here anyway?
Oh, one of the windows in the back.
You would find the one I haven't overlooked.
Well, I had to prove I wasn't lying when I said I saw somebody in here.
Now, look, fella, I told you we're both trying to prove the same thing. How about giving me a break?
Well...
Oh, I know you're better at this sort of thing than I am, but it happens to be my living, my job, so, how about going home, huh?
Yes, your mother's probably wondering where in the world you are. Come on.
She knows I can take care of myself.
Hey, I'll be in the kitchen, Brooksy. Oh, what a deal. Mrs. McCauley, why didn't you stay out of my life? You and your Citizens Committee for the Prevention of Ghosts.
George. Oh, George.
Oh, that Tommy character.
Well, he's a character. Well, don't you believe in light? Oh, George.
Oh, don't be afraid. Oh. Just a childhood habit sprawling out in the kitchen floor.
What happened?
You frightened off a remarkably agile ghost. I got tapped before I could even turn on the light.
But it can't be.
Yeah, well, this bump is no make-believe.
But where did this thing go? It couldn't get out. There's no place to hide. Tommy was playing around in here, and we were watching the house from the outside.
Somebody tried to give me the same kind of scalp massage Mitchell got.
Oh, what goes on here?
Brooksy, we're not leaving this Victorian love bower until we find out.
We'll return to tonight's adventure, George Valentine, in just a moment. Meanwhile, a word about waste. No motorist would deliberately drive with a choke out. It would be like throwing gasoline away. But some folks let the air cleaner under the hood get so dirt clogged that it can waste just as much gas as a pulled out choke. Even worse, a dirty air cleaner means that some road grit and dust is mixing with the gasoline, and that can raise cane with finely polished engine parts. So take a summer driving tip. Have the air cleaner on your own car serviced. It's an inexpensive job that you can have done quickly at an independent Chevron gas station or a Standard station. While you're there, let them help keep your engine cooler by cleaning out the radiator. That's another simple, speedy service which repays its cost many times over by maintaining proper engine temperature, better all-around operation. Ask for radiator and air cleaner service tomorrow at any Standard station or independent Chevron gas station where they say and mean, we'll take better care of your car. Now back to tonight's adventure of George Valentine. Well, a committee of interested neighbors hires you to prove a certain house isn't haunted. Oh, yes, you discover almost accidentally that there's been a murder committed in said house, a brutal, unsolved murder at that. Finally, you have to be knocked unconscious before you're convinced you're dealing with anything but a ghost. So, just like George Valentine, you change your tactics.
Well, let's face it. Somebody was right here in the kitchen with me, and he didn't have a chance to leave the house.
Oh, we keep going over the same thing.
All right, Angel, all right. Let's be very simple. Why did anybody want to jump me like that?
Well, I'd say whoever it was didn't want you to find him in the kitchen.
Ah, now you're being very nice and simple.
Thanks.
Since I took him by surprise, he wouldn't be carrying a shillelagh around in his hand. He probably reached out for something that he knew would be there, something nice and handy, something like... Hey, what could be handier?
What are you doing, George?
This poker hanging on this old-fashioned coal stove.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah. And Brooksy, it's got blood on it.
Yeah, Riley.
This is Samuels down in the lab, Lieutenant. And about that stove poker.
Well, let's have it.
We checked and talked to the medical examiner. That was the weapon used on Mitchell, all right. We're working on the fingerprints now.
Well, good.
Well, that does it, Lieutenant. Whoever killed Mitchell was there in the house with us tonight.
Now, wait. Don't go jumping at conclusions.
Well, you don't think it's just a coincidence that of all the things in the house, he used that stove poker on George?
He knew just where it was. He used it before.
Well, okay. I'm going to buy that. And what's more, I'm going back to that house with you.
I don't know what else we can find there that's what has me stumped.
Well, if I have to, I'm going to tear that place apart with my bare hands.
George, I'm sure we turned all the lights off when we left.
Yes, so long.
But there's a light in the parlor, all right. Come on. What in the name of heavens is that?
Sure. Horton, the milkman, he hummed it to me. He swears he heard somebody playing it on a banjo or something when he passed the house one morning.
Well, let's go inside and find out what this is all about.
Oh, goodness. What must you think of me sitting here and singing to myself like this?
I thought you were staying at your sister's place, Mrs. Mitchell. Why did you come back here tonight?
Well, let me see. Oh, yes. These two nice young people and I were talking about the old times. Just this afternoon.
Yeah.
The songs we used to sing. And that naturally reminded me of the mandolin. You can understand that, Lieutenant?
Oh, yes, sure. What mandolin, Mrs. Mitchell?
The mandolin, of course.
Oh. Look, Valentine, I don't give up easily, but this is getting out of hand here.
Wait a minute, will you hold it, Lieutenant? I'm very interested in that mandolin, Mrs. Mitchell.
Are you, young man? Paul Huff gave it to me when I married Sam.
Paul Huff? He was one of your beaux, wasn't he?
He was so handsome, and he adored me. No one could play the mandolin like Paul.
I'm sure of that.
He was the leader of our club. I've always felt that Paul gave me that mandolin so I'd never forget him. Or the dreams we had together.
I don't know why, but let's get back to that mandolin. Huh?
Now, that's just it, Lieutenant. It's gone.
Huh?
It's the only thing in the whole house that's missing. If it was a tramp who killed Sam, why would he just steal a mandolin?
Oh, you'd be surprised how many questions I can't answer, Mrs. Mitchell. Come in the next room, Valentine. I want to talk to you. Come on.
Okay.
You can understand, Miss Brooks. First, I thought of Paul and Mandolin. That's the song. That's why I was singing.
Valentine, a weird thought just occurred to me.
You mean that Mrs. Mitchell might be our ghost and murderer?
Well, she had a quarrel with her husband. The milkman says he heard something that sounded like a mandolin, and the old girl plays one.
Uh-huh.
Ordinarily, if you wanted to kill somebody with a stove poker, just a couple of smacks on the head would have done it.
Lieutenant, Mrs. Mitchell is small and fragile.
Yeah. And it took a lot of blows on Mitchell's head to make her a widow.
Now, I've kicked around too, Lieutenant. But if I don't come up with anything better than that, I'm going to buy me a mandolin and play on street corners.
Well, I'm going to get Dot Al down here.
Police psychiatrist?
Yeah. Maybe he can get her to make some sense. I know I can.
Enjoy talking to you, Dr. Farrah.
You don't mind the others being here?
Oh, no, not at all.
All right, then, we'll go on. Years ago, when this house was built, you meant it to be a sort of, dream castle.
That's exactly right, Doctor. It's strange how you should know.
But in back of your mind, you didn't mean it to be for you and Mr. Mitchell.
Oh, but you're wrong, Doctor. Sam and I lived here for 40 years.
What I mean is that you were thinking of someone else all the time, whether you were willing to admit it to yourself or not.
What about that, Mrs. Mitchell?
You leave me alone. Get away from me.
Wait a minute. Don't get excited.
Doctor. You guessed my secret.
Take it easy, Mrs.
There's nothing to be afraid of.
I never let Sam how I felt. I tried to make him happy. Believe me.
Yes, we do believe you,
Mother. Just a minute. In here, Riley.
All right. What do you make of it, Farrell?
Well, Valentine, I wouldn't say she's crazy.
Okay, Doc, what would you say?
You've heard of people who stop them physically, others mentally.
Yeah.
Well, some stop growing emotionally. She's one of them.
Oh, don't go technical on me.
I mean, for some 40 years, that woman has tried to remain a romantic young woman, holding on fiercely to a love she had to turn her back on. It's as simple and complicated as that.
And one day she couldn't stand it any longer and bumped her husband off, huh?
The answer to that, Lieutenant, is your job. I don't think you need me anymore. Good night.
Good night, Doc.
Well, it's all wrong, Riley.
What's all wrong?
It finally came to me, a matter of arithmetic. Play around with it all you want. 5 never equals 6.
Oh, listen, haven't I had to unravel enough double talk here tonight?
Mrs. Mitchell is not even 5 feet tall, and I'm over 6. She couldn't hit me over the head with that stove poker.
But it couldn't be anybody else, unless he's hiding behind a molding somewhere.
And if he is, we'll find him. What do you say we really take your advice and start tearing this house apart?
George, we've been through this closet before.
All right, so we'll look at it again.
What are you looking for, gentlemen? I might be able to help.
Please, Mrs. Mitchell.
But I only
saw... Wait a minute. That patch up there in the ceiling.
Huh?
That's funny. I never noticed that before.
What, that little square? Well, even if it was an opening, it wouldn't lead anywhere.
Uh-huh.
Well, it couldn't be more than a few feet between the ceiling and the roof.
Here, wait a minute. Let me have that umbrella. Does open.
Well, if somebody could squeeze in and out of that hole, how could he stay up there?
Well, why don't you give me a boost? Maybe I can take a look.
Hey, how about that, Lieutenant? Can we borrow your flashlight?
All right, here.
Okay.
Up you go, Brooksy. Well, what do you see?
Let me get the flashlight on, will you?
Yeah, Brooksy?
Oh, George! Huh? Oh, let me down, please!
I got you, Angel. Oh. What is it?
Oh, there's a man crouched up there. Oh, it's horrible.
Paul? How could it be Paul?
Say, Valentine...
Remember, Lieutenant, you're in a hospital, not down at headquarters.
Oh, yes, sure.
And the nurse is likely to throw you out.
Well, I'm sorry. But look, Valentine, look, you and I are on this case together, aren't we?
Well?
Well, I just got a confession from this Paul Huff character. He admits he killed Mitchell.
Well, that's that, then.
Just a minute, Miss Brooks. He must talk some more, but he keeps freezing up on me. Oh, Valentine, see what you can get out of him, will you, huh?
Well, okay, Lieutenant.
It's so important that someone know I didn't plan it. I didn't mean it to happen.
You sure you want to go on?
Oh, yes. I must. You see, I never made anything out of my life. I never knew just what I wanted. Except the few times I'd come back here to town and pass that house on Bliss Terrace. And then I knew what I always wanted, but I never could have.
You mean you've been coming back here all these years?
Oh, they never saw me, but this one time I knew I was getting old and sick. I went into the house
when they were out,
yeah,
I wanted to see what life was like for them, living it so calmly and so peacefully. And suddenly I heard someone come in. I didn't know what to do. I ran into the closet. There was that opening in the ceiling. Somehow I climbed up there, and that's where I've been staying.
But how long?
Oh, weeks. I don't know. It's hard to say. I don't think I could have stood it if I didn't hear her moving about.
But Sam Mitchell was your friend once. You could have talked to him.
I thought of that, too. But one night when she was away, he walked in and he saw me in the kitchen, yes. And I was scavenging for food just like a tramp. He didn't even know who I was.
Oh, don't try to sit up, Mr. Huff.
Suddenly I felt nothing but hatred and envy. And I grabbed the stove poker and... And I had no place to go. I went on living up there.
When you found me in the kitchen last night, you felt I was the intruder and you belonged in that house, huh?
To think that she kept my mandolin for 40 years. That's a long time, isn't it, young lady?
Yes, a very long time.
Yeah, I guess that's all I wanted to tell you. Sorry, but I'm beginning to feel very tired.
I'll see that the lieutenant gets your story straight.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. And I'll tell Mrs. McCauley there'll be no more ghosts on Bliss Terrace. Finely polished and precision-built engine that gives your car all its go can't be neglected. In fact, it needs more attention when you're asleep than when you're driving. And the reason for that is internal engine rust, which goes to work when condensed moisture begins to settle over parts. Nearly any ordinary oil can fight off rust when your car is running and there's full circulation of the lubricant. But RPM motor oil is compounded to protect the engine when it's running hot and when it's standing cold. Unlike ordinary oils, RPM doesn't run away from its job when you cut the motor. A special adhering compound in RPM keeps a tough oil film on all engine parts, protects the interior of your engine from rust. And that's another reason why Western motorists choose RPM motor oil 2-to-1 over any other motor oil. Get RPM at any standard station or independent Chevron gas station where they say, and mean, we'll take better care of your car. Next week, when you tune our way for another adventure of George Valentine, you'll hear Lieutenant Riley saying,
Valentine, when you tell me there was a girl sitting in this chair when you came in and that she had committed suicide... Mm. Natural curiosity makes me ask, where is the body?
I don't know, Lieutenant, but she was there.
If you ask me, my friend, somebody's taking you for a ride.
And if you ask me, my friend, I'll keep saying it's Marcia Palmer who's been taken for a ride. And, Lieutenant, I intend to find out where and why.
Tonight's adventure of George Valentine has been brought to you by Standard of California on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and Standard stations throughout the West. Let George Do It stars Robert Bailey as George with Francis Robinson as Claire. Wally Mayer appears as Lieutenant Riley. Tonight's story was written by David Victor and Herbert Little Jr. and directed by Don Clark. Also heard in the cast were Sarah Selby as Mrs. McCauley, Virginia Gregg as Mrs. Mitchell, Stanley Farrar as Dr. Farrell, Howard McNear as Paul Huff, and Alan Reed Jr. as Tommy Caney. The music is composed and conducted by Eddie Dunstetter, your announcer, John Heaston. Listen again next week, same time, same station, to Let George Do It. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.
You knew the job was dangerous when you took it.
Radio production.